Vault. Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome, everybody, to Film Vault. That's Anderson. Hey. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for the biggest episode of the year. One of.
No, it's the best.
It is the best. All right.
I love this time of year, Brian.
You know why this is the best? The fall preview, the top five most anticipated movies of the fall and winter?
Because the best movies of the year are all coming out. And
well, they're unspoiled. They all look good. We're not going to get what may have been a bad pick for me, number one last year, The Counselor. They're not going to get a Counselor.
You have to see that.
I have not seen it.
You know what? You're probably going to like it now because everyone's told you how horrible it is.
Really?
Yeah, it's like when somebody tells you something's really good. You know what I mean? It was undersold.
I apologize for any lisp I have, Anderson. I bit my lip and I'm bumping up against it with my teeth.
Uh-huh. I thought that was just your way of celebrating the Giants' win.
How dare you?
Talking with a lisp.
I was actually.
Is that offensive?
You know what I thought about
did
actually?
I just said offensive
I
and
homophobic? I honestly thought about bringing up the fact that Giants and the Pirates are playing on the show tonight, hoping you hadn't seen it, and then you and I'd make a bet about the outcome.
How would I have not seen that?
You don't really follow baseball.
I'm doing the Pirates are okay.
Okay.
I had the MLB. Wow. I was every time I walk the dogs, I'm
you
listening to
dust off
it.
The jersey hadn't been worn since 1991. Right. Like, here we go.
Listen, we got lots of stuff to get to.
We
love
do.
This time of year.
Big app.
You know,
big sod.
Weather is changing, even though it's gonna be 100 degrees out here tomorrow. Yep. It's soon to be like windy and
it'll be nice in my neighborhood.
Cool and
it'll
crisp.
Be hot as shit in yours.
God, every little jab he can. He just jabs away.
How's Jack?
So many. Hockey's back. So many different.
Hockey is back.
Great movies on the horizon. So I fuck your top five
aww.
Formula. I don't like it. I'm not doing that. I think I have like 12, 13
you know
movies.
I wish I'd written down. I thought to myself, how many is Anderson going to have?
12,
I guess
13.
10.
Okay. Maybe 4. So let's get right to it. I got.
Brian,
I'm talking. I'm in the middle of a sentence.
I would like to hear what you have to say.
I got three flick fashions to get to right away, as well as a bonus flick fashion, Brian. I'll be flick fashing the best movie I've seen all year.
Really?
Later in the episode.
Holy smokes.
Later in the episode.
Holy golly.
Brian, don't say that. What is that white hissing noise? It's distracting me all to hell and gone. Do you hear it? Is it just me? All right.
Is there another mic on right
It sounds
here?
Like a ghost. It's
Logan, is your mic on? Turn off. Just a good practice in general.
Okay. Let's do...
There's a hiss.
Flick fashion. I was assigned...
Unlike you...
You're going to do five. Great, Brian.
I showed the listeners some respect and kept the top five list of five. Show some goddamn discipline.
I'm showing the listener respect by making sure that I mention anything that's interesting and worthy of being mentioned.
Wow. Is that how we're doing it now?
Hunger Games will not be mentioned, Brian.
No.
I don't, you know what? One of the main reasons why I don't,
go ahead and I'm
not even,
that. Let me change
despite
that.
The fact that it's, I am going to go see this movie. Philip Seymour Hoffman will get me in my ass in that theater, his involvement. But I maybe I'm old, but I just do not like the formula that they're using with the one, two,
oh, the
three part one.
We've talked about
three
this.
Part two.
We've
I just can't stand
this.
It. I hate
the splitting
stand.
Of the last one into two. It's a cynical money grab from
yeah,
my perspective.
But on the other hand, you know, maybe the fans of that series are excited.
Oh, they're gonna eat it up.
Okay, so
nope. I'd rather it be one.
Oh, you a fan?
Yeah, I've read all three books.
Like,
I like it. I'm a fan.
You're an outlier, dude.
Okay.
Logan's like a film nerd. He's an outlier. But most people will love the fact that there's more Hunger Games. My theory has always been split the first movie into two because there's so much exposition. I still don't know how the Hunger
that
Games came
be
to be.
Fantastic, Brian, in a perfect world. But you got to get everybody to come back for the second one with a lot of, like, you know, cramming a lot of shit into the first
Hence
one.
Why it's a cynical money grab.
Here we go.
You were assigned a film.
I was assigned a film.
Yeah, you were.
Back in 1988, a little film was made called Bloodsport.
Oh, is this the best movie you've seen this year?
No.
Oh.
I, Anderson Cowan, have been actively avoiding this
Stop
film.
Stop it.
For the last, what is that, 26 years? Is that 26
How
years?
How old were you when it came
Holy
out?
Holy shit. 26
or
years?
Something?
I was like 35.
Okay.
No, I was a kid. In the movies, not in the Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, but this
Never.
Is a fun action film.
So, first impressions. 1988, it was made by a man named Newt Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
And my first note was Donald Gibb, also known as Ogre.
Oh, yes, that's right.
He's the buddy. He's the pal. He's the sidekick. Ogre.
Is he the one who has the pickup line outside the girl's bathroom? The girl walks in. He's like, number one, number two. Is that him or is that somebody else? Someone in the movie has that great pickup line.
Perhaps it was him. I don't recall.
What?
I don't remember, dude. This movie.
You didn't watch the movie.
I've seen like four or five movies since. Oh, I watched the movie. Here are some more notes. Bloodsport, it's as though it were created for the purposes of recording all the worst things about 80s movies and jamming them into one. They had slow-mo, zoom in, zoom outs, hideous, awful acting, Brian.
The best was the slow motion, like snarls, like
clumsy melodrama.
Is it a lot of that?
And corny jokes. Montages galore.
Yes.
And Forrest Whitaker and some old dude who they presumably work for the government, but that's not explained for the first half of the film, are just gallivanting and globetrotting around the world looking for Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That's right.
They don't explain why.
A lot of kicking.
And Frank and his kumite. So the whole story is, and I guess some big video game from the day came out of this. Bloodsport, is this true?
May have.
I don't. This is not a movie made for me. Yeah, it was tender.
Were
we moments.
Able to
it was
enjoy
cute.
It?
And you know what?
Jean-Claude
Van Damme, he was almost like a sympathetic hero in this movie. If I didn't know him as Jean-Claude, I'd be like, oh, you mean that, what's his nationality?
He's Belgian.
Oh, you mean like that nice Belgian fellow from that terrible movie Bloodsport from the 80s? You mean that guy who was like really nice and sweethearted? Like I was almost rooting for him. Mm. Like he almost convinced me that like he was just a mild-mannered, very respectful. So the storyline is, and I'm
Did
not
you get upset
expect-
when he got sand thrown in his eyes?
No, I didn't get upset by that.
The, upset me as a 10-year-old.
All the tropes are there with the bag. It was almost like Karate Kid for adults, right?
Yeah. I mean,
but I don't get the sense
in the arc of the film
making this movie for
there was no Miyagi character.
Without the Miyagi, they weren't making this movie to be bad for the sake of it being bad. Like they thought they were making a kick-ass action movie.
Oh yeah, for sure. This movie is authentic. It's genuine.
It is genuine. It's almost cute. Like if a mentally challenged person made a movie, be like, oh look what they did.
This movie's great because it's 100% genuine. But if you made this exact same movie today, it'd be 100% ironic. It would have gone a completely the other direction.
He flashes his ass in one scene, which was just very over the top. And
was there an
face.
Ass?
Yeah, like he was getting dressed and he had his little Speedos on, and then he pulled the Speedos down, almost like, hey, here's my ass for you.
Jean-Claude was not shy about getting naked.
But the story is there's some kind of underground fight club in Hong Kong,
I think.
And somehow they recruit and single out the best fighters from all these different genres of fighting around the world, and
this
they invite them to the kumite.
This is the genesis of like Street Fighter and all those.
And I can see how it had a different place back then too, before like all these martial arts and the cage fighting and you know, all this stuff, Affliction apparel and
MMA.
You know, MMA, all this shit is huge now, but back then it was not.
It was deadly.
It was boxing or this.
Secret.
So I could see how like a bunch of like stone 15-year-olds probably felt themselves while watching this.
Oh, stop it.
I mean, I could see how it would be like their wet dream movie. I don't know why you would make me see it, but it was endearing almost. I did not have a terrible time watching it.
Yeah.
But I didn't need to see it.
As a relic of the 80s, it's a fun movie, I would imagine, if you have not seen it before. I remember when I was 10 years old and, of course, got perverse pleasure out of seeing so much blood being kicked out of heads.
Perverse, yeah. See?
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm getting close. Oh, speaking of perverse, no time on this episode, guys, because we have a lot to get to, but I found a new little thing that I fucking love. IMDb, they have so much information on the Internet
Movie
Database.
You just found
them?
It's not little.
Have you ever heard of it?
No, I have.
Internet Movie Database. No, Brian. On IMDb, they have so much info. They have a little button you can push. Parent Guide.
What does that mean?
Some poor fuck goes... Like, movies that aren't even released yet to the public.
Mm.
They have, you know, it's like the MPAA.
Right.
They got their people in there screening these movies, taking copious notes about... And they have it all broken down. Like, sexual content.
Really?
Violent content.
For each movie.
Language, yeah, for every movie.
This just derived from the ratings, right?
No, like they're not. They're
is
like
there
critics.
Some IMDb employee going on like
no. They get
this?
It. They get it from the MPAA.
Okay,
probably.
That's what I mean.
Like this. Remember that documentary? That great documentary. This film is not yet rated.
Yes.
It's those fucks.
You know that's at the beginning of every movie trailer, right?
What?
It says what the film is going to be rated, and it says why it's rated that.
Yeah, yeah, just but it's very generic. It says, like, strong language, some drug use,
does this
smoking.
List every reason why it's...
Let me tell you this. Like, I saw a movie, which I'll be flick-fessing later, and I went on, and I saw this. I was really, you know, researching the IMDb page, looking for all this information I could find, and I saw this parent... button. So I parent guide. So I pushed it, and there was just one little blurb. I'm sure they'll add to it later, but there's one little blurb for why it would be inappropriate for children. And then I started thinking, wait, what does Irreversible look like?
Oh no!
What does Tusk look like?
No.
What does Human Centipede look like? And I started looking up all these movies and just. pages and pages and pages. Irreversible has some really, really funny shit.
Logan, read one to us.
No. We don't have time for this episode, but that coming soon.
It's a movie show.
Coming soon. You know what? And in fact, I think there's a game here. I'm not a big guy for movie games, and I remember you used to try and force that on me, like the early inceptions of this year program.
Okay.
But I think maybe we should do the
Is it generic enough that you could do that?
We could do the parent guide where, like, we pick a movie, one that we know that the other's seen, and we read the parent guide comments. And see if the other person can figure out what the movie is.
The better version of that is listeners send ideas to Logan, he reads them, and you and I guess.
Okay, or that. Yes.
So listeners just send me lists of movies?
No, they obviously say, oh, Logan, this has a great parental guide because it has all these things. And you obviously don't read the identifying information like Mr. Miyagi says, bend over. you read it as though we're trying to guess what
all
the
right.
movie is.
Well, Twitter at The Film Vault. Facebook / The Film Vault.
Do it. Good call, Anderson.
I was very excited when I discovered this. Now, I don't know if it's on older movies because I'm looking right now.
Well, there's got to be enough movies out there where it is.
But I'm looking right now on Bloodsport, which I have pulled up here on the internet, and it's not. Well, I'm not seeing Parent Guide.
It's probably like anything, like the plot synopses and the plot summaries. Like they're only there if someone puts them in. So some user has to go on and put it in.
Right. It's probably newer thing.
If a parent comes across Bloodsport, they probably know that it's not for kids. Whereas Irreversible, it's a French film. It's got a girl on the cover. I have no idea.
Waiting for my coffee in this coffee place, reading The Irreversible about 3 hours ago. And I was like audibly laughing. I was like trying to stifle my laughter because it was so, so funny.
Look, give us a highlight. I got to hear what's on this.
While you're FlickFest, and I'll bring up one highlight. I was just imagining the poor fuck who's in there who's, you know, obviously not enjoying himself. But he has to take these notes. He's like a critic, you know, who's taking notes, but with a different, very different mindset. He's like looking, he's watching the film as though he were a 16-year-old girl.
Can you see him with a disgusted look on his face, shaking his head like, Anderson?
Brian, no one can see that except for me.
Describe my look.
You're looking like Brian with your eyes closed and a turtle-ish face.
That's good.
Like turtle-esque.
No, that was good. That's a good description.
It was kind of smug and disgusted.
It was mostly disgusted.
All right, go.
Bloodsport.
Bloodsport's wrapped. Let's move. I have 90 movies to get to today. Get your lots of good movies to put earmarks on. Dog ears them.
Three films. I'm going to get the bad one out of the way. You saw a film, and I did not, earlier this year, called Bad Words.
Yes.
Bad Words, directed by Jason Bateman.
I warned you.
Starring Jason Bateman. You warned did. You. I believe you called it like really drab or really dreary.
Yeah, I don't like the film stock. Even though it was probably shot digitally.
Right.
I did not like the yellow mustard tones throughout the entire movie.
There is almost a sepia tone to it. It is Jason Bateman's first directing movie. He stars in it, obviously. It was notable, Anderson, for being on the 2011 Blacklist. You know what that is?
Yes, and I'm going to talk about that later today. Oh, yeah. Tonight.
Okay.
Franklin, he's a friend of mine, the guy that runs the Blacklist.
That's right. I really want to get him in here.
Franklin Leonard.
He'd be an interesting guest.
Yeah, Franklin and I have been emailing back and forth, and he's all on board to do the Film Vault, so we'll have him on later. He's just constantly at festivals.
Okay. The Blacklist is a website where unsigned or unrepresented screenwriters post their scripts, and the scripts get read by anybody, and people can give them feedback or whatever.
And then at the end of the year, the top 10, I believe it's the top 10 best unproduced Hollywood scripts are released.
Yes.
And Hollywood studios,
their name, rewarded.
Now are clamoring for that email that Franklin's.
Yeah, it's a big deal now.
And usually those movies, every movie on the of the 10, usually they get produced and bought pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And this was on the 2011 Blacklist, which is ironic, Anderson, because not only is it not a good movie, a lot of the problem lies with the script. So number one, you remember the Jason Bateman character from this movie? Don't touch thermostat, please.
Yes, I do!
Is he an anti-hero? Is he a sympathetic villain?
He's an anti-hero. I can see how this would be a good little script.
No.
Beginning, middle, and end, and dialogue and his interaction with the kids. What it is a grown man who found a loophole in the spelling bee. He's like a 40-year-old man, Jason Bateman. Mm-hmm. And the loophole that he found was anyone who's graduated eighth grade is not allowed to be in the spelling bee. Well, he never graduated eighth grade, so he's like, fuck it, and I'm going to go in the spelling bee, and I'm going to win the National Spelling Bee. That's his goal. You're never quite sure why he's doing it.
No.
Is it because he's an asshole? Is it because he's sadistic? Is it because he wants the fame, the money? Why is he doing this?
That's a good point.
He's embarrassing himself. Everyone hates him.
I had no idea who to root for in this movie, with the possible exception of the little kid, but
the Indian kid. For sure, he's in there just so that you don't hate Bateman quite as much.
But he's still unlikable and joyless. There's no joy to him whatsoever. He's not enjoying it. It's not like the Billy Bob Thornton character. We can tell he kind of gets off in Bad Santa, where he really gets off on like telling people off and being mean to kids. He's kind of reveling in it in his own misery.
He's enjoying himself, making fun of the kids. Oh. Jason Bateman's character? Yeah, when he's talking to the fat kid, talking about how the chair is like screaming for help, he's enjoying himself.
I disagree.
Where this movie completely lost me, and I can never ever allow it to get into my psyche as a decent movie, is the absurdity of his hotel room. That would never happen. That has never happened.
That was played that out was cartoony. For laughs in the mockumentary Best in Show.
Yes.
That was done better.
And they tried it. Here's what it was. They were booked. He threatened them. They gave him a room, but it was the maid's closet.
Yeah.
And they put a cot in
there. Janitorial closet.
And that would just never, ever happen. In today's litigious society, that would never, ever happen.
Yeah. So my main problem with it, I agree with that. My main problem with it was that he was totally unlikable and totally joyless. And in my opinion, that's the key to a great anti-hero. Like your Daniel Plainviews or your Patrick Batemans or Borat or even Dom Hemingway, who we talked about last week or the week before. They have a zest, Anderson, for being bad. Like they revel in it and it's their thing. Like even Daniel Plainview, who's a miserable, self-loathing character, he likes making other people miserable. He's in competition with himself and he likes to mess everything up for other people. And Jason Bateman just didn't have that in this movie. There was nothing to hang your hat on. It reminded me a lot of Young Adult. Remember the movie Charlize Theron? Did you see that?
The movie Charlize Theron?
Pay attention, Anderson. I know you're looking on there, but please pay attention to what I'm talking
about. Listen to I feel like I was scolded by a school teacher right
now. Did you see Young Adult with Charlize Theron?
No, I would not do that to myself.
Well, good, because it was similar to this movie in that she's kind of an anti-hero. She's drinking and not really a likable character, but there's no joy to her life. She doesn't take joy in her badness, which is a tough, tough sell when the movie is not worth rooting for. Not fun. Dreary movie.
All right,
That's it. We're going to talk about some good movies.
I don't know why you would spend so much time on bad words. But why would you go see that when I've warned you? There's so many good movies to see, Brian.
I hit the top of my queue.
All right, I'm gonna give you what you're asking for.
Okay.
I've discovered a new little twist in my new favorite thing in the world, The Parent Guide on IMDb.
Okay.
You can't get it on the browser version. It doesn't show up. You got to look at it on your phone, on the IMDb app.
It's highly, highly debatable.
Which is strange. All right. Logan.
You can. It's on the right side.
What?
Oh. Yeah, it's like in a little box. With all these quick links.
Damn it. All right.
Anyway.
Well, here's a quick here's a quick little thing from Irreversible, right?
Yeah.
While a man's skull is caved in, a man can be seen very briefly, rapidly masturbating to the act. And then in brackets, very graphic.
It's written in prose? I didn't realize it was written in prose. I thought it would be like skull-crushing scene. Like I didn't realize it was like while a man.
That's what I'm saying.
Crushed.
It's like they're like critics, but like critics like warning critics. They're critics of
content. Content critics.
Content critics. Yeah,
that's great.
All right,
we're gonna do that for sure. Listeners, send Logan your and try to make it too obvious.
And do bigger movies, especially at first.
All right,
so I'm not good at games.
Oh, a man's skull is crushed.
All right, Robert, I saw a little film that's not getting a whole lot of release. I don't think it ever will because it doesn't have a cast.
Okay.
It's called The Guest. The Guest. I think a lot of our listeners will enjoy The Guest. Mm. I'm not going to ask you to run out and see this in the theaters.
Christopher Guest.
Not quite enough there for me to say, got to get in your car, drive down to the theater, get your ass in the seat. But do earmark this one for a rental, send away for it. It's worth that. Or if it shows up, it's the kind of movie that will probably be streaming within the 12-month period. Guest was... directed by a man named Adam Wingard, who is the director of Your Next. I don't know if you ever saw that one, Brian.
No,
it was a fun little... I flick-fest it earlier this year, I believe. Maybe last year. He also is responsible for the VHS movies as well as other movies. He's primarily a horror film director. This one's starring a guy named Dan Stevens, who I guess his fame is Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
I've never seen it.
So he's new, brand new to me. Okay. As well as a very...
Is he a British fellow?
He was not in this film.
Okay.
He may be.
Okay.
I bet he is. He was not in this film, though. He looks very Bradley Cooper-esque.
Gotcha.
Very Bradley Cooper-esque. As well as a very attractive Micah Monroe. She plays the young 20-year-old daughter. What I liked... let me tell you what the storyline is. A family living, I believe it's New Mexico, if I was reading the license plates properly, correctly. They lost their son, Caleb, in Afghanistan. He was a soldier, right? We learned that very early on. Mm-hmm. Knock on the door, and there's a soldier at the door. And it's Dan Stevens, who's playing this character named David. And David says hello to the mother. I was your son's friend. I was in his platoon. I was there when he died. He told me to come by and tell you that he loved you, and I wanted to do that. They invite him into the house. You know the dad? And you know the guy, the dildo knife guy in Seven? He told me to fuck her.
Yes.
So I did.
Yes.
I fucked her. Well, he's all grown up now, and he plays the dad in this movie.
Okay, well, he's gotten out of prison.
He plays the dad. The actor plays the dad in this movie. He's an alcoholic, but, you know, one of these alcoholic by nights guys. What's his fucking name? Leland Orser.
Okay.
And he's got a little son who's like probably middle-aged school, freshman in high school, as well as a hot daughter. Not teenage daughter, though. I like this because it's so true, especially nowadays. She's 20 years old, almost 21, working at a diner, still living at home.
Okay.
You never see that in movies. When I saw her show up, I'm like, oh, fuck, Brian's going to hate this because she's obviously not in high school.
But no.
You never see kids or like old young adults living at home unless that's what the whole movie's about. I really like that. I thought that was real. So slowly but surely, you learn that this David character might not be who he says he is. Mm. A whole lot of drive in this movie. You really feel like Gosling would have been perfect for this.
Okay.
I don't know if this movie exists without Drive. A lot of things that you would love about Drive, you're going to love about The Guest. There are some very satisfying moments. He takes care of business. He takes care of his family. It does completely unravel for me by the time it's over. But a good, fun little thriller. And there's some really funny things that happen in it. But when there's movies like Blue Ruin out there, I can't. Unfortunately, I'm holding it up to high standards like Blue Ruin. You know, I'm thinking I just saw Blue Ruin a couple months ago. If I didn't see Blue Ruin, I probably would like this one a whole lot more, even though they're very different movies.
Okay.
But it gets a little bit ridiculous with the government. There's a twist, and it's like, all right, I've seen this before.
Okay.
But way better than most Hollywood thriller action movies.
Sure. And this is in theaters now, but you're saying you can
limited wait. Release. Limited release.
You can wait.
But yeah, like it's just not much of a cast. The cast is, you know, if they had a couple big names, like if this is Bradley Cooper, I could see this being a big movie. It's not.
Is the cast good? I mean, the actors, are they good?
Yeah, they're all good.
Up to the task?
They're all good. This is, you know what this is? It's like an 80s movie that was never made. It feels very 80s in the same sense that Donnie Darko felt very 80s. It was aptly set Halloween time, so it's all Halloween motifs, which is nice this time of year. And, yeah. Oh, and it sounded like the score was all done by like Autobahn or something. Don't make that face. Good stuff.
Oh.
Again, you love the score for Drive.
That's true.
It was very like 80s Hans Zimmer or like the guy that did the Miami Vice. It's always.
Oh, Jan. Oh.
Jan Hammer.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Yeah.
Jan Hammer. An 80s movie that was never made. 80s movie for 2014.
Okay.
The Guest.
The Guest. I saw a film. Speaking of Mexico.
What?
I saw
who's speaking about Mexico?
You mentioned Mexico at the
beginning. I said New Mexico. Please listen to me.
Speaking of Mexico. Old Mexico, that is. There you go, buddy. Drink it down.
Brian, it's water. Go. What's wrong with you? Brian, don't not into the microphone.
I saw a film that was set in Mexico, largely.
I gathered that much, Brian!
Have you ever seen the Orson Welles classic, Touch of Evil?
Yes, long time ago. That opening shot is fucking phenomenal.
It's tremendous!
Yes.
Opening shot is...
He's a large man.
He is a large man. Is it in this film? He is in this film, along with Charlton Heston. He plays Mexican. Orson Welles.
What made you see this?
What? Oh, it was, I talked about this recently. I was on a podcast called,
this is gross.
Get Up On This, and the co-host was urging me to see Touch of Evil. It's like, it's a great movie. I'd never seen it, and it reached the top of my queue. So here it is, Touch of Evil, also starring Janet Leigh. So this is one of the last noir films of the era. When Orson Welles had been in Europe for about 10 years. He wanted to come back to Hollywood. He wanted to make a Hollywood movie. And he wrote and he directed. Easy. He wrote, he directed, and he edited his version of this book that turned into a movie. He turns it in. When the studio saw it, they wanted to make significant changes to it. He was unreachable or unwilling to come make the changes. So they hired, Harry Keller to come in and replace some scenes.
Helen Keller's brother.
That's right. Replace some scenes and shoot some new ones. And he was the sort of second director. Welles saw the version, this new version. He wrote a 58-page memo. Did you hear about this? Which version do you see? Is that years ago?
Yeah, I saw it years ago. I saw a DVD of it.
He wrote a 58-page memo to the studio detailing in detail the changes he wanted made. He's like, no, change this, trim this, cut here. It was a long, long memo, and they basically ignored it. They released, what was it, a 93-minute version, which he didn't like, and was sort of a B-movie, and it was actually kind of a sad, like, relegation for this once great director. Come on, buddy. Stick with me.
Go ahead. Yes.
Stick with me.
You're not talking about the movie. You're talking about, like,
it's an interesting history of the movie. Okay, okay, it's an interesting history of how the movie came to be. 93-minute version of the movie, kind of a B movie. It actually played B movie to one of Harry Keller's A movies. Mm-hmm. And even though it starred Charlton Heston and Orson Welles, it was directed by Orson Welles, a big comeback movie, it was kind of relegated as B movie status, went away, kind of became lost to history. And then Walter Murch, the famous film editor, re-edited a 112-minute version based on that 58-page memo in 1998, and they re-released it, and this was the DVD that
what
I
year
saw.
Was that?
I saw, this was 1998.
Yeah, I saw that version.
Okay, so this is the re-released
after 2000.
Director's vision. They can't call it director's cut because he didn't do the cut, obviously. He was dead, but they call it his vision. And, yeah, opens with that great tracking shot, a great long
crane
shot.
Was that cut from the original?
Shot. No, of course not. It was one of the best shot in the movie. Right?
No, I mean, when it was a B movie, did they still have that in there?
Oh, I have no idea. I assume it was.
That's the original.
The studio wanted to change that. They wanted to interrupt it with other stuff. And he's like, no, this is an important shot. So right away, like,
it's good instinct, studio.
Yeah, right away, they're on different pages. There's some great, like, dramatic uses of shadow and reflection and angles.
Well, yeah, he always does that. I mean, that's what he's known for.
Yeah, you know that you're going to, exactly, you know you're going to get some interesting stuff.
For the first time with Citizen Kane, no one had seen a movie like that where he was playing with light and using the deep focus. And but I like this way more than Citizen Kane. I thought this was a much more palatable
film. This is the very Anderson movie. This is the movie that hipsters can safely say, wow. Well, I like it better than Citizen Kane.
Well, fuck Citizen
Kane. They're kind of...
Right.
Equal in the grand scheme of things. They're both great movies. I can't say you'd like one significantly better than the other. However, this is a movie that does not get nearly enough love, and Citizen Kane might get a little too much. So there you go. Did you notice that he mounted a camera onto a car, which was, I think, really unusual for the day, because everyone, you know,
cameras were massive back then too.
And also in that day, they used rear projection. They just, right. You've seen it in old movies where you see people obviously fake driving a car and having a conversation. And in back of them, there's some sort of obviously fake street set going on. And that's rear projecting. They're just projecting a scene in back of them and making it look as though they're driving. He actually mounted a car into a camera. Really good movie. I liked it a lot.
I think you're done, dude.
Yeah, I guess this counts as a cult movie. If you like old movies, you have to see it. But this could be counted as a cult movie, but really like Touch of Evil. Good movie.
It's a good movie.
Great noir movie. It really captured the era.
Hey, this just in. Anderson found Bloodsport's Parent Guide.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
The very first thing, when you just chided me a moment ago.
Was there a compound fracture in the
You
movie?
Were yelling at me a moment right. ago? It's because I discovered something that I was sure. I was not looking at you. I right. was looking at the computer screen
sure.
over here,
sure.
which is much more entertaining for yeah, at the yeah. moment.
I understand.
And I could not control my laughter. It was because of this. The very first thing, Bloodsport, Parent Guide, sex and nudity. A man's bare behind is visible briefly. That's what I was talking about. It was so gratuitous. There was no need for it. He was fully clothed. Well, not fully clothed. He was wearing his Speedo.
He was clothed.
He was wearing a Speedo with his back to the camera. And like she's supposed to be asleep. He doesn't even know that she's awake. And
it's her POV.
He just pulls like his pants down for a second and then puts them back up. He does like a little snappy, you know, like a little, like I want to get the waistband right. Yep.
There's a compound fracture in this movie, right? Like a full on bone sticking out.
I'll read profanity, some strong language, including four F words. They actually wrote
four
F words, S words, A words, etc. Frequent. I'm going to read it the way the person wrote it. Frequent fight violence with some occasional blood, including frequent bloody mouths and noses.
Yep.
A man's thigh is shattered.
And
the camera lingers on the protruding bone for a couple of seconds, as well as some knocked out teeth that are showing on the ground.
That was a big moment in my young life. The compound fracture.
Some fight scenes may be intense. The final one especially. I didn't even mention the main bad guy, which he was hilarious. He was very funny, very narcissistic, very into his own ability to kill people with his bare hands.
That's right. Didn't he looked like Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, right? Like
I don't know who that is.
Longer hair.
And he loved when people would cheer him, and he would stand up and just soak it in.
Yep.
God, he was a narcissist.
And there was a lot of slow motion growls.
This just looked like something like somebody trying to make, like you said, like I'm talking about Bloodsport again, like an ironic video game version from the 80s. Like, I could see this movie being made today.
It'd be hilarious.
Yeah, being hilarious. All right. I saw a film, Brian, called Trax.
Trax.
You familiar with this movie, Trax?
I'm not. What is Trax?
Brian, how are you not familiar with Trax?
I haven't seen it.
What's wrong with you? I have seen it, and I'm going to tell you all about it right now. Directed by John Caron. In 1977, this is a biopic, Brian, which, by the way, it should be mentioned coming up on the episode when we do top winter preview, fall winter preview. Mm-hmm. Biopics galore.
Oh.
Dominating. You notice that? A lot of biopics. More on that later.
Hold on. Let me look at my list.
This is a biopic.
Let me look.
Brian, we can multitask. I'll talk about Trax while you look at your list, and then you can chime in after him. See what I'm just for the sake of brevity. But then we can...
Yeah, moderate amount.
Thank you for that, Brian. In 1977, Robin Davidson is her name. She set out to walk across Australia.
Oh, yeah. This is, what's her fuck? Reese Witherspoon?
No, that's Wild, Brian.
Oh, shit.
Movie. Different movie. Similar, but different.
Damn it.
Wild is a movie that will not be mentioned later.
Or will it?
By me. Oh. It will not be. This is Mia Wasikowska,
okay,
who we're going to see a lot more of. She was in The Kids Are All Right. She was also in an Alice in Wonderland, yes, I believe, which I actively avoided. She's very good. I've seen her in probably four or five movies now. Very good on screen.
Okay.
And you know what I was thinking? And this is not like me to think. It's not, but she, a couple like semi-nude scenes.
Yeah.
You never see anything where like Mr. Skin can actually, you know, have like any
a new entry.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to make his sight. She might.
Would this make the parent guide? Does it make the parent guide?
Yeah, for sure. Oh. Parent guide will not like her sidal nudity.
Mm.
It'll mention it for sure. Maybe I'll look it up during a break. But she's a little flat-chested, which I like. I like that. She takes these serious roles. I think that Hollywood is that shallow. Like, if she was heaving-breasted, because she's a very pretty girl, I could see her getting I don't know her as an actress. Mm. Maybe she wouldn't want those bigger roles, but she takes these little personal roles, and this is definitely one of them. This is the story that tracks her across the desert.
Mm.
And National Geographic actually sponsored Robin Davidson, and she was assigned a photographer. Now, her whole deal, she's in her young, she's like 22, 23 years old.
Wait, who's Robin Davidson? This is the biopic.
Yes, the biopic. Sorry, talking about tracks. Yeah. Now, she, 1977, she's 22, 23, Australian girl. I don't know if they make them like this anymore.
Mm.
Attractive girl, because they show you the real pictures of her at the end. Like, she's a pretty girl. And she decides she doesn't like people. I bet you in real life, horrible bitch.
A match made in heaven for you.
But she, no, Brian, not at all. But Mia plays her really well, and she's likable. I mean, she's compelling on screen. You like Mia as an actress. So, you know, she's not a horrible bitch. I kept thinking, though, I bet the real life Robin was probably just...
unpleasant.
Insufferable, sure. You know what I mean? But she was assigned a photographer, much to her chagrin. Nat Geo, National Geographic's like, hey, we'll sponsor your trip so we can write an article about it, but we're going to have a photographer come out and meet up with you like four or five times. That photographer, Brian, was played by Adam Driver, who is quickly becoming one of my favorite actors. Now, I don't watch girls, so Adam Driver is new to me in these films. First time I remember seeing Adam Driver and recognizing him or a performance that he did that was great was... last year.
That's him?
In Llewyn Davis. Yeah, nice. He's the guy that was the baritone, I guess, yep, right? So he plays...
No.
He's a kid that is going to be one of the best actors. He's also in...
Space.
This Is Where I Leave You.
Okay.
Which is a movie that you should not run out and see. Yeah, don't go out and see that one. I won't even flick fest it. What do you think of that?
Wow.
I won't even flick fest
it. I can't believe I saw it, honestly.
Adam Driver... Because of Adam, it's a great cast. I'm talking about This Is Where I Leave You. Great cast. I was compelled to, despite the fucking director. Oh, him, Sean Levy, Levy, whatever. Anyways, Adam Driver in Trax. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. Let's talk about Trax. He plays a Logan-esque character.
Really?
So Logan.
Really?
He looks like him. He talks like him.
Interesting.
Real likable, nice kid.
This is not the first character we've seen this reminded us of Logan.
Remember, is Logan-esque.
In the Gavin McInnes movie?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the one where he's How to Be a Man?
The little
kid with the camcorder?
Yeah.
That's this, Logan.
Adam Driver in Trax is much more Logan-esque. If anyone wondering who what Logan's like and you see Trax, That's him. I was worried. Speaking of I was worried about this movie. I was thinking it was going to be long and lingering. Mm. And, you know, how do you, a woman walking across a desert across Australia, how do you make that interesting? You know what I mean? It opened up with an upside down, soft focus, out of focus image. And I was thinking, oh no, here we go.
Oh no.
But then her voice comes in.
You were thinking, oh no.
And her voice comes in, and she, I like voiceover, especially if it works. I'd much rather hear some nice voiceover by the main character, let me know what's going on, almost like in a journal fashion, than clumsy exposition. You know what I mean?
I do, because I saw some horrible voiceover in Bad Words. Unnecessary.
A lot of it
didn't need to be there.
It was probably added later. Because they needed it. But, you know, a lot of snobby critics hate the VO, and they think it's lazy. And I think it really can work. Like Blade Runner, I like the studio version more with the VO. I like it a lot more. Crucify me. So this, much like Contiki, a little bit like Life of Pi, and All is Lost, it's one person's journey against the elements, but she puts herself in this
position.
It's
like Into the Wild?
Much like Contiki. Oh. Kind of like Into the Wild, but fuck that movie.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, fuck that movie. The first third of this movie, I recently learned that I love camels. Like, I've been learning about camels, and I've got a soft spot in my heart about camels.
It's an odd thing to realize.
Don't want to go into
advanced stage.
I went to a place in Nevada that has since been shut down, but it was a wild animal refuge.
Well, sanctuary.
Sanctuary. And I spent a lot of time with the camel there. I got to learn about the camel.
Is that where you pet the otters?
Yes. A blind boy, actually, I was told the story about a blind boy who was obsessed with camels, and he went there and he pawed the camel's face, and the camel put up with him. And I've learned that camels have more distinct personalities than even dogs.
Really?
And I think they get a bad rap because you're always thinking of them spitting.
Yeah, they get ridden.
So the first third of this movie is fascinating, especially if you have any interest in camels. It's more about camels than it is about her, because her, what she needs to do is break these wild camels. There's more feral wild camels in Australia, at least in the late 70s, at the time that this movie was took place, than anywhere else in the world. They imported them to ride them around in Australia, like in the 30s, 20s. And then when cars and bikes came into play, they just kind of said, fuck them. But they thrived. They went out in the middle of Australia and thrived. Huh. Anyways, first act, phenomenal.
Will non-camel enthusiasts enjoy this movie?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like a hardcore. It's not like I got like bumper stickers. I love my camel. I just like camel. If you're an animal lover, I think you're going to like, the camel. And it's interesting as well. It's very interesting. And then the problem with this movie is that I think it was too true to the actual story, which is a good and a bad thing. Hmm. They needed, for me anyways, to maybe Hollywood it up a little bit.
I gotcha.
Because I think that they stayed very true to the story, and not a whole lot happens.
Yeah, dramatize it. There's something called artistic license.
But it wasn't God Love the Movie, Jerry, spelled with a G, back in the Gus Van Sant's Jerry, which I fucking love. But I mean, that movie is like it dares you to watch it all the way through, because it's just Matt Damon and Casey Affleck walking. They get lost, and it's just them walking. There's like one scene that's like, I think, if I recall, 3 minutes of just uncut them walking and being tired. It's not like that. It's not that bad. Adam Driver gives them some nice drama. She's got a dog and 4 camels, and she cruises, and she sees all these dumb, fat Australians who are a lot like Midwesterners who are constantly coming up and trying to take pictures of her. She's known as the Camel Lady, and she's kind of famous in her day, you know, and people find out where she's going to be. There's some great Aborigines. It's a good movie. But it just doesn't have enough glitz and glamour and pizzazz to make it a wide release. It's not going to track.
Tracks.
It's not going to. I do like this movie.
It's called Tracks.
It's called Tracks.
And where can it be seen?
It's a small release right now, limited release. I don't know if it's going to get a huge release. I hope it gets more releases. I would recommend going to see this. It's nice to see a movie about a strong female character who is not hateable as well.
What would the parent guide say about this?
I don't know, Brian.
No, guess. Is there violent imagery? Is there a side boob?
They would have some spoilers, I bet, about some sad things that happen.
Do you see inside of a camel?
No. The camel's footage is fucking amazing, though. Like, they go out and they actually wrangle camels. Really? Some of the footage that they have early on. The first third of this movie almost stands up on its own. It's like a little short. Mm. So good. All right, go ahead.
I saw a film.
Tracks.
I saw a film that came up last week in our baseball movie episode, Top 5 Baseball Movies with comic Steve Hofstetter. And as a movie that I had not seen, for some reason it eluded me. It had been my cue forever.
It's a lot of buildup.
And believe it or not, it was expiring this week on Netflix Instant, so I decided it was time to see 8 Men Out.
Oh!
8 Men Out!
Finally, this is the movie you're going to like a lot.
Eh. 8 Men Out was from 1988. Written and directed by John Sayles, director of Lone Star. Great ensemble cast. Who would you say is the main character, Anderson?
Cusack.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would say it's either David Strathairn's character or Cusack, although I don't think there is one, actually. I don't think there's a true like lead character.
As it's like a team actor. Story.
It's a true ensemble piece. It's David Strathairn, John Cusack, D.B. Sweeney's in this, Michael Rooker, Charlie Sheen, John Mahoney, Christopher Lloyd, like you said, is great in this. Great characters, top to bottom. I loved all the characters in this movie for different reasons. Some are likable, some are very unlikable, and some are just flawed people. Some are just people who have flaws, and they are... all interesting. They're all well-drawn characters.
A great period piece, too. Like,
totally.
You were never distracted by anything. You were in that time period.
Yeah, everything felt authentic. The uniforms, the way the players played.
Talked,
yeah. There's some great old-timey music. The score is fantastic in this.
This is an underappreciated movie.
It is. They really nailed the tone. There's some funny parts. There's some dramatic parts. But they stay in that almost innocent place in the middle where it's not too serious, it's not too funny, it's just kind of life was a little bit simpler. This is obviously pre-depression, post-World War One. Yeah. Fuck. Anyway.
Should be in between.
The one thing I did write down was that it's funny they're giving a Southern teammate kind of a hard time. They're like, yeah, the war's over, you know, the Civil War is over. And you forget that in 1919, it was only, you know, it's only been 60 years since the Civil War. Like, it's pretty recent.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. It's like what Vietnam would be today.
Yeah.
That's weird, isn't it?
Civil War is so recent for this movie.
It's weird when you think about that.
It is weird. Anyhow, good movie. I'm surprised it took me so long to see it. 8 Men Out is currently not streaming, but it will be back soon. I've noticed it go back and forth a few times.
Oh, really? Did you watch the stream?
I did. It expired, like, I think today.
Oh, well, I gave the heads up last week. So,
you did?
Yeah. I wish I knew that it was expiring, though. I would have given a bigger heads up. Like, check it out. Mm-hmm. It's a little long.
It's 2 hours, but it doesn't feel very long, actually. I mean, it doesn't feel like a two-hour movie. It moves. It's enjoyable. It's a fun movie. It's well-paced and enjoyable. If you're a baseball fan or a sports fan, you should definitely see it. And history fan, I mean, there's a lot to enjoy
this
here.
This is right after World War One.
Yeah.
It was World War One even discussed? Was it mentioned? Was that one of the reasons why Comiskey was interested in fixing it?
Did he take a hit? I thought World War One like went to like 1920.
Did he take a hit? Okay. No.
Anyhow.
All right. So we should be hearing music because that segment is put to bed. I will be flickfasting another movie.
You will.
A little later in the program.
You can't do that.
The best movie I've seen all
year.
You
can't do that.
But Brian, you'll understand why. Because it's kind of a part of.
That's illegal.
I don't like how you're breaking up illegal into two words. We're going downtown.
Coming up next, the top 5 movies we're most looking forward to this fall. You would recommend the movies I enjoyed. They must have seemed so plain to you. The girl I tried to subdue. Anderson.
Yeah.
Someone used our Amazon click-through to do something very interesting I didn't even know was possible.
Please, no, be sexual.
No, well, it is in a very tangential way. Somebody created a baby registry. Like, they're having a baby, and they created their registry with our click-through.
Oh, that's sweet.
I never knew you could do that.
That's fantastic.
That's very cool. Thank you for doing that. And if you're having a baby, if you're getting married, I guess you can create a registry. I didn't even realize you could do that, but that's very, very
usually
cool.
I'm upset about babies, you know, because there's a lot of people on the earth already. It's like, yeah. Go out and adopt one, you know, find one of the pounds.
This one you're okay
but
with?
But this one I'm okay with, okay. Yeah.
Other cool things purchased this week include a Star Trek pajama set, a Star Wars zip-up hoodie, what is this here, an HTC prepaid phone, Cybertron PC. It's just a PC, but they call it a Cybertron, so I'm into it. I should get a history book so I know when World War One was. A Toshiba Chromebook, a record washer system. You got to wash your records, people. If you have records or record player, you got to wash that shit. You got to dust it. Sausage casings for making your own sausage, Astroglide personal lubricants, Trojan Magnum condoms, a Kindle, and what is this here? Somebody bought 54 two-piece sets of silicone egg pancake rings. So I guess you pour the batter in to make perfectly round pancakes?
OCD.
I don't know why you need 54, well, 108, but good luck. Someone got some comic book paper, so they're going to make a comic book, I guess. Send us a copy. We'd like to read that. Someone got a hammock. Someone got a... Come on, buddy. Come on.
Sorry, I'm reading some stuff that I'm going to talk about in a second. Here. A hammock. Was it a banana hammock?
No.
A banana hammock? Was it a banana hammock? That's a Speedo. Banana hammock?
Actually, no, it was. Sorry.
I want to get a Speedo. Is that wrong of me?
Yes. Why would you want that?
Because I get in the pool for half a second, then I get out, and like my board shorts take forever to dry.
Oh, it's your pool. That's fine. That's fine.
So I want to throw on but I don't want to go in naked, which I do often, and then I don't want to be embarrassing.
You want to do like a Van Damme and just slip the shorts right off.
Like if somebody's working on the power lines or something, right. I don't need them looking down, seeing my
snappy snap
white ass.
Someone got an indoor rowing machine. That's a good workout, that rowing machine. And somebody got a smoke detector plus carbon monoxide from Nest. Good luck, everyone. Anderson?
All right, here we go. Here we go. Here are the movies that were clicked through, and we're gonna give this a little test run. Okay. We're gonna give the new Parent Guide game a little test run. Okay, I'm gonna see if you can guess the first movie that was clicked through, Brian. With here's a Parent Guide. For the sex and nudity for this movie. Several cars make suggestive references to kissing and dating, and in one instance, a female car calls her husband a sexy hot rod.
These are cars having a conversation?
Sexy hot rod. That's actually kind of explicit when you think about it.
It's true.
You're a sexy hot rod.
It's got to be cars or cars
too. It's cars, Betty!
Cars has it on the Parent Guide?
Oh, there's a lot of shit on the Parent Guide. The opening race features a huge multi-car crash, the kind you've likely seen if you've ever watched a NASCAR race. Fucking Parent Guide. All right,
Jesus.
Here's what else was that click through. Frank! Fuck yes! You can have Frank in your own living room now. I am, because it's Frank.
I love you all.
My now second favorite movie.
I love you all.
Because it's one of my favorites.
It's your precious.
Neighbors was clicked through. Smart move. X-Men. Days of Future Past, Brian. Also involving a Michael Fassbender. Bad Ronald? Somebody clicked through for Bad Ronald. I appreciate that. Inglourious Bastards. Limitless. Fuck to the ass with the Limitless.
Underrated movie.
Noah. Goddamn. Rockbusters.
Not a good film.
Oh, it was fine. Seven. Somebody put that on her. Fuck her. So I did. I fucked her.
And that was the dad and the guest.
The Godfather Collection. The Coppola Restoration. Did he restore it without the third?
He restored it to its original glory.
The Place Beyond the Pines, a movie that Brian does not understand. The World's End, this is a movie I do not understand. Transformers, Age of Extinction, as well as Zodiac, a movie without an end.
True. Oh, very true.
Yeah.
Thanks for clicking through, everyone. We appreciate it. Back to the show. Well, hey there. I'm Jimi Hendrix, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com. Yeah. Welcome back. Union Specific. Have we had them before? Okay, Union Specific is back. Austin, Texas' own Union Specific. Their album is Diesel Engines and Kerosene Visions. UnionSpecificMusic.com. Or Anderson and Brian.
.com.
Anderson, I dug up.
Settle down. Oh, shit. I did the same thing then, too.
I dug up my fall previews from the last 4 years. Do you want to hear them?
40?
4 years.
No, I don't want to hear four.
It's not that many more. I'm not going to discuss.
That's not an entire presidential term. It's an entire high school career. I don't need 4 years, Brian. Give me a couple.
No. From 2010, the first year we did this, 5-1 for me was the final Harry Potter film, Buried, Freakonomics, The Social Network number 2, my number one most anticipated film 2010, Jackass 3D.
Idiot.
And by the way, paid off.
Idiot.
Paid off.
God, you used to be worse than you are now. All right, go. Which other one?
In 2011, I was most anticipating The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo at number 5. By the way, this is only going to show that half these movies, if that, end up being good on my list. In Time, which was a disaster. Haywire, which I kind of liked as a guilty pleasure, but third most anticipated. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol was number 2 for some reason. And number 1, I stand by The Muppets.
All right, was that 2011?
That's 2011.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
2012?
Oh, yeah, wait. My 2011?
Got it?
Want my 2011?
Yeah.
All right. Is this interesting for anyone other than you?
Yes.
Settle down. Settle down. Evidently, I did the same thing I did this year where I have
did
a bunch of movies.
12 films?
Revenge of the Electric Car, never saw it.
It's actually pretty good.
In Time, never saw. The Rum Diary, never saw. J. Edgar, saw. Did not like. Into the Abyss, saw. That was okay. Immortals, The Artist. Oh, Christ. The Artist. The Descendants. Shame by Steve McQueen. Shame was on there. Fuck Shame. Yes. A Dangerous Method. Tanker, Taylor, Soldier, Spy. Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Oh, God, that was awful. And The Darkest Hour.
What was The Darkest Hour?
I don't even know.
What it's sad fuck? When you don't even know what the movie is. You're like, what is
Wait,
that?
This is not good, though, Brian. I feel like this is not my my actual...
In 2012, my top...
I don't
top
think I have a list. That wasn't my list.
Okay.
4.9 on IMDb for The Darkest Hour.
No, no. Although you're going to say on Netflix. I'm like, that's pretty good.
Emil Hirsch. No. Now, that must not be in my top five. That must be an also-ran. Okay. I don't have...
2012, my top five was The Sessions, number five. Good movie, by the way. Underrated. Django Unchained, also very good. The Master, I had high ups for The Master. Cloud Atlas, I stand by Cloud Atlas as at least interesting. And number two, most anticipated film of 2012, fall, was Skyfall. Skyfall for the fall.
All right, 2012 for me, Brian. I don't know.
Oh, come on.
Okay, I got it. I got it.
Let's hear it.
Cloud Atlas. Was number five for me. Number four was Lincoln. Oh, Jesus Christ. That was just because of Daniel Day. Daniel Day-Lewis.
DDL.
Killing Them Softly, number three. Number two, Zero Dark Thirty. Nice. And number one, Silver Linings Playbook, which did not pay off for me, but paid off for many people.
True.
Many people
And
loved
finally,
it.
Last year, my number five was Blue Caprice, which it took me forever to see.
I still have not seen. Don't want to.
All Is Lost, which I ended up liking a lot. Captain Phillips, good movie. Wolf Wall Street, good movie. Number one, The Counselor.
All right, my top five.
My also-rans that year, sorry.
Go ahead.
My also-rans last year were Dallas Buyers Club, uh-huh. The Fifth Estate, never saw it.
No one did.
Escape from Tomorrow, not good. No. Muscle Shoals, pretty good. Last Days on Mars, I had to look it up to see what it was. I'm like, what the fuck is that? It's a Liev Schreiber film that never really did anything.
Here we go. My number five last year was Joe.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what was Joe?
Joe was Nicolas Cage. Came out earlier this year. I flickfest it and liked it.
Okay.
Ty Sheridan. Come on now, Brad. It's like Mud, but Nicolas Cage.
Right. It got pushed
David
to
Gordon,
the, it got pushed
David
to this
Gordon
year.
Green directed it.
Okay.
Yeah, it got pushed to this year. Okay. It's not going to make any noise, and it's going to be forgotten for the most part.
Gotcha.
But Dog, isn't it? Real life guy who's not an actor. Oh, he'll never forget Dog. All right, American Hustle was my number four. Number three, The Devil's Knot, which also got pushed. I finally saw it and was not memorable. Number two, there was the story of the West Memphis Three, Devil's Knot. Mm. By
what was your number four?
Adam Egoyan. Number four, Brian, going back, was American Hustle, which ended up being my number one. Mm-hmm. I loved American Hustle last year. Number two for me, The Wolf on Wall Street. And number one, my number one most anticipated movie of all year last year was 12 Years a Slave. Which paid off. It was a very good movie.
Oh, it was a great movie.
Very good movie. Academy agreed. And also, my also ran was The Dirties, which I really wish I squeezed into the top five because I would have felt like a genius.
So we're probably barely over 50%. Well, you're probably more than me, but we'll see what happens this year. You want to start us off? How many movies are you going to talk about?
I think 72.
Wow. Cut it down, huh?
All right, here we go. I should probably start since I have a number, but I got dates here for you, and we're gonna get through this. And you don't have a whole lot to say about these movies, because all right, I'm gonna start strong with a little movie that I like to call. This is my only comedy. Questionable, but one of my only comedies. Comes out Christmas Day, Brian, and I would be surprised if it's not on your list. The Interview.
I have no comedies.
The Interview's not on your list, Brian.
No, it's not. So it's a good thing you're talking about it. It looks
directed.
Very funny.
Directed.
Let me
go ahead.
Just say, deep year for fall movies. There's a lot of good-looking ones in years past. Perhaps The Interview would have made my list, but it's an also-ran this year. But many, many good-looking fall movies.
Did that need to be said?
It did. It did.
You needed to tell me right now there's a lot of good fall movies.
Yes, this would have made my list in years past.
You needed to take 30 seconds saying it.
I'll say it again. This would have made my list in years past, but this year, so much deepness, so much depth.
Christmas Day, The Interview will come out, and also might be the day that we get our asses bombed.
Oh, by North Korea.
Now, this is directed by Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, the same two the team that brought us last year's This Is the End.
This Is the End.
Which is a phenomenal movie. Phenomenal
True.
Comedy.
True.
Very, very good comedy. They team up again for this one. This is another one where James Franco and Seth Rogen are playing themselves. The storyline, most of us are somewhat familiar with it. If you go to movies and you see trailers or you read anything, most of us know. Like, they're almost like Vice reporters type thing, but more like cartoony. And they have an opportunity. They find out that... Kim Jong-il, or the other one,
Kim Jong-un?
The new one, yes. He's a fan. And they find out, they're like, oh, sweet, we can do an interview and become like actual reporters and respected. But then the CIA swoops in and makes them do some kind of a plot to assassinate Kim Jong-un. But here's a really, really interesting part. I don't know if you've heard about this. You hear about North Korea's reaction to this movie?
Heard they love it.
On June 25th, Brian, 2014, that's this year, just a few months ago, North Korea's official Korean Central News Agency, also known as the KCN,
okay,
KCNA, condemned the film without naming it, promising a merciless retaliation if the film is released. Quoted as saying, making and releasing a film on a plot to hurt our top-level leadership is the most blatant act of terrorism in war and will absolutely not be tolerated.
Wow.
KCNA said, citing a government spokesperson.
What if, honest question, what if this film...
That would be the dumbest way for America to meet its demise.
Yeah, what if this movie leads to like a terrorist attack? Leads to some sort of bomb?
All right. That comes out Christmas Day. Well, if you want a fun movie to see a little bit earlier, check out Nightcrawler, Brian.
Yeah, Nightcrawler. Almost on my list.
This comes out October 17th.
It does.
This is Jake Gyllenhaal, who I like a lot. I was on the fence with him there for a little bit.
I don't want to like him, but I like him most of the time.
God, he was great in Prisoners last year. Now, earlier this year, I saw him in Enemy.
He's great in Source Code.
I did not care for Enemy. Hopefully, less Enemy, more Prisoners type Gyllenhaal. He plays a, it's interesting, this.
He was in Zodiac.
Profession, Brian. This profession that he's portraying in this movie here, Nightcrawler. He's a creepy loner who is a L.A., a freelance news videographer. These guys are out there. Actually, I had a main water pipe burst in front of my house. I don't know if I told you about that a couple months ago.
Actually, no.
I was out in my backyard at 3:30 in the morning, the only one awake in the neighborhood, drinking some scotch.
What?
Reading about movies and/or the penguins. And I heard like bubbling, like a babbling brook out in front of my house. So I'm like, what the fuck? That's a new brook. I've never had a brook in my street before. I looked and there's like little geysers shooting up out of the street. Very odd. Okay. And then it started gushing and the entire street like raised up about 3 inches. And I thought, I'm going to be like this. My entire street's going to be on the fucking news. This is huge. And it wasn't huge, which I'm thankful for. But I mean, there was a river going down my street. Right. And one creepy dude, 3:45 in the morning, one creepy guy showed up with like the tripod. He had the sticks. He had a light. He had a camera. And he was just shooting. Right. That's the kind of guy that Jake Gyllenhaal is going to be portraying in Nightcrawler. And he...
privatized news reporting.
Apparently, the storyline is he's becoming dangerously addicted to... depicting terrible, terrible things.
Right. And he shows up at crime scenes, basically.
Yeah. So it's going to be some gore, I would assume. Writer turned first-time director Dan Gilroy wrote this one, as well as first-time direct this one. He's responsible for writing The Bourne Legacy. Real Steel. You saw Real Steel, didn't you?
Real Steel's not bad.
Same guy that did.
You may have to see it
someday. Same Sean Levy that directed...
You may have to see it someday.
That directed... This Is Where I Leave You.
You may have to see it
Real
someday.
Steel. He also wrote The Fall, as well as Dennis Hopper's Chasers.
Real Steel's not a bad movie. Logan, you saw Real Steel. You must have loved Real Steel. No? Didn't love it?
Didn't see it.
Oh, didn't see it.
Rene Russo, as well as Bill Paxton, are also
in
Nightcrawler.
It's like a grittier Pacific Rim.
October 17th, Nightcrawler. October 17th, Nightcrawler. It's good.
Yeah, look good.
Real Steel, Brian.
Not bad.
Shut it.
It's not.
It's a film about a father and a son that's really about, it was supposed to be about kick-ass robots, but once I started, you know, doing this movie, I realized it's really could be about his father and his son. It's a touching relationship.
That sounds about right.
That's what the director was quoted as saying.
Number five for me. Number five is where I take a little bit of a risk. My number 1 through 4, I feel, are pretty solid choices. But number 5 could be garbage. But the trailer looks pretty fucking good.
Brian.
I don't know how to pronounce it. I would either call it Automata or Automata. Do you know what Automata is?
No.
Automata comes out soon, October 10th. And it stars Antonio Banderas. Now, if you're like, do you want to see a sci-fi movie with Antonio Banderas? I'm like, nope, skip. However, trailer looks pretty fun.
When's this come out?
October 10th is what I have.
All right.
It looks like a combination of Elysium and iRobot. He's like he's working and kind of a little bit of District 9 in there too. He's sort of integrated with the robots. He's I don't know if he's the guy or in the future robots are they're everywhere, they're ubiquitous, and they're exterminated if they malfunction or if they're obsolete or whatever. And it looks pretty solid.
I still got to catch up on the skin I live in. I believe it is Antonio Banderas.
Mm.
The skin
we're in or something?
The skin I live in.
Oh, is that what it is?
2011, yeah.
Yeah, Automata. I don't know a lot about it. I don't know a lot about the director, but the trailers look pretty awesome. So it squeaked on my top five.
Gabe Ibanez. Ibanez. That's probably how you say it. It's Ibanez, yeah.
Gabriel Ibanez.
Mm-hmm. That's probably how you say it. All right, here we go.
Do you see the trailer for this?
No, I've not seen. I should also mention I've seen very few of these trailers.
Okay.
Oh, really? I actively avoid trailers.
What?
Actively. When I go see a film,
they do start to give away a lot.
They're getting worse and worse and worse. Almost like the outline that these editors are given that put together the trailers are like, you must
show the funny part, show the happy part.
Here are all the scenes of the movie. We want you to get at least 6 seconds from each of these scenes, including the very last scene, into the trailer somehow. Thank you. I think that's a memo that they get. Those are the notes.
Agreed.
Okay.
Automata.
All right, Brian. I think that's going to be one that we're going to read next year and say, I don't think I even remember seeing that. Did anyone see that? I don't believe anyone ever saw it. All right, that one's too big to talk about. That one's too big to talk about. That one's too big to talk about.
This is a good prep for you.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of info here, but Brian, that's too big to talk.
You got to pick one at some point.
That's true. All right, I'm going big. This might be my, The Imitation Game, Brian.
Yeah.
A biopic, The Imitation Game.
Yeah, this is the Benedict Cumberbatch movie.
Yes.
Yeah, not on my list.
More importantly.
Another good-looking trailer where I was like, oh, I can't put it on.
More importantly, directed by Morton Tildum.
Downey Jr.
Morton Tildum, Brian, who you may remember as the Norwegian director who made Headhunters.
Yeah.
Headhunters!
Solid movie.
If it's still streaming, check out Headhunters if you have not seen that. It's widely known as Norway's biggest film ever. It's their biggest everything in movie. Headhunters. Very, very. I think it inspired the Unraveling episode that we did.
It may have. Very clever, fun movie. Yeah.
If this movie's half the movie that Headhunters is, it's worthy of being on my most anticipated. Strictly because of the director's work on Headhunters. This script, Brian was talking about The Blacklist earlier. This script for The Imitation Game was the number one on The Blacklist in 2011. Unproduced Hollywood scripts. Benedict Cumberbatch plays Alan Turing, the guy that cracked the Enigma code in World War II. That's now, true. Here's what's interesting. We know he cracked it. It's right there in the opening line of the synopsis of the movie. Mm-hmm. Is it still going to be interesting knowing that this guy, I thought, you watch the trailer, and I have seen parts of this trailer. A lot of time what I'll do is I'm such a nerd. Mm-hmm. I realize that. I'll just start looking at my phone. I don't quite go to this extent that I put my face inside my shirt, which I did for a few.
Sure.
When there was a trailer coming on, I was just trying to zone out. But I felt way too nerdy. But now I just look down on my phone. And usually if I'm focusing on something on my phone, I can just, I don't even hear what's happening.
Totally. If you're reading something, it blocks out your other.
I'll read about movies rather than watch the trailers. But I have seen some trailers for this one. It looks interesting. It looks very period.
We've explored that whole concept and we did top five movies where you already know the ending. So
right.
We know that movies where you do know that's a historical fact for some reason or something like that, still enjoyable.
The trailer makes it still look like the enjoyable. Entire plot device in this is whether or not he can crack it. I mean, that's how they kind of make it seem. Like, maybe I didn't pay attention enough. But I really think The Imitation Game is going to be a big Oscar-worthy film. From everything that I've heard and read, and
I think this
one's going to be like a front runner. So,
The Imitation Game.
The Imitation Game. Logan, that's one of the only ones that I don't have a date on. Will you look
that
up?
That is, hold on, I wrote it down. It's
November 21st.
November 21st, kids.
Don't ever talk over me again.
All right, here's a smaller film. But I am also very excited about this one, Brian. Force Majeure. You know this one?
I saw a trailer for it.
Oh, did you?
Oh, wait. Or did I? Well, who's in this?
It's a Swedish film, Brian. My only foreign film.
I skipped over it because it was in another language.
Seems like my kind of film. Okay, October 24th is when it's released. It's the only foreign film that I have on here. It's not going to get wide release because it's a foreign film. But I loved The Hunt last year. Mm. Loved it.
Mads.
And this one might kind of, this is the kind of movie I could see being up for best foreign language film for sure. Rolling Stone says this about it. Natural disaster is thankfully avoided. It's a Swedish film about a Swedish family that goes up in some kind of snow-ridden mountain, mm-hmm. like a retreat area.
Sure.
And they almost get hit with an avalanche. The fallout that occurs when Dad abandons his family when he thinks the end is near turns out to be completely catastrophic. Now, here's where they get me. If you like uncomfortable silences and cringe comic moments accompanied by crying binges, this is the fall movie for you.
Oh, you do like those things.
I love it when somebody who's comfortable in their day-to-day role is tested and you learn that they aren't actually the role that they are pretending to be every day, which his father obviously is.
Gotcha.
I don't think that's a spoiler either, because I think it happens early in the film, and then the whole movie is about how this dad deals with the fact that he, as head of the household, he was willing to abandon his entire family to save his own ass. I'm looking forward to this one.
I don't think you can spoil a film that, number one, you haven't seen, and number two, you're only reading from the description that is put forth by the
film. Plenty of people ruined Tusk. Hey, how do we not? Why did you not see Tusk?
I haven't seen Tusk.
I thought I sold you on Tusk last week.
You
thought
for sure. Terrible.
I loved it. For all the wrong reasons.
Okay.
I thought we were going to have a nice spirited discussion about Tusk. I
heard it's going away from the theater soon.
The fuck? Have you seen Tusk yet, Logan? What's wrong with you guys?
Yeah.
All right, you fucks.
We did a top five movie a long time ago. We did top five directors you've broken up with.
I'm back together with Mr.
Kevin Smith.
Smith
might be on the list.
I'm back together with him.
Oh, really? Okay.
Force majeure.
Number four for me.
One, two, three.
This is good, because now we're getting to the part of the list where we're going to start having some crossovers. Get yours ready. Number four for me. Inherent Vice. Five,
six, seven. I'm not
Fuck.
Familiar with that. I'm not familiar. Please, tell me about this Inherent Vice. Eight. No, I still have nine movies to go. Brian, please tell me about Inherent Vice. Miami Vice.
Number four for me is Inherent Vice.
This poster looks like Miami Vice. That must be purposeful.
Have you seen the trailer?
I am avoiding trailers.
The trailer looks very much like a little American Hustle, a little Boogie Nights, a little bit of Big Lebowski, and a little bit of Wes Anderson.
Listen,
this
is why the top five doesn't work this week, because Inherent Vice is just my clear-cut most anticipated.
Really? Even after The Master?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Paul Thomas Anderson, for my money, is the best working director we have right now, and I will see anything he does.
Really?
And even if it's something like The Master, which I didn't love, I have revisited. I like it a little bit more, but not as much as I'm supposed to,
It's impenetrable.
No, it's not. My problem is the characters just aren't fun. Now, I think he's going to have some fun here. This comes out December 12th.
Yep.
It's L.A. in the 70s, which is going to be awesome, because he is very true to his period.
Yes.
Reese Witherspoon, Jenna Malone, who I shared a cigarette with once on Loveline years ago. She was a little bit, what's the word?
Inebriated?
She was out there a little bit.
Inebriated?
No, not inebriated. She's kind of like...
Flighty, kooky.
Josh Brolin, Brian. Owen Wilson, Benicio Del Toro, Michael Kenneth Williams, Brian. Michael K. Williams, better known as Omar. Oh, he's going to be good. Eric Roberts, Paul Thomas Anderson's wife for the first time in a movie of his, Maya Rudolph, as well as Martin Short. What the fuck are you doing in there, Martin Short? Do not ruin my movie, Martin Short. You best not ruin.
Yeah. I'll let him know.
And then starring Joaquin Phoenix, which very well might ruin my movie, because I'm not a big Joaquin guy.
What?
I don't love him.
I can see you liking him.
I did before I'm Still Here came out, and I just did not buy that.
Never saw I'm Still Here.
Don't. It'll make you hate him, and I don't believe that that was a hoax. Even though they tell me it is, and everyone tells me I'm an idiot for not thinking that it's a hoax, I think that he had a fucking breakdown, and Casey Affleck put it out there, and then felt bad about it.
Mm.
So then they said, it's all just fake. I think he really had a breakdown. I think he's playing himself.
Inherent Vice, number four for me, obviously higher for Anderson.
148 minutes. But it's okay. Bring me a three-hour movie. If it's Paul Thomas Anderson, I'll eat it. Eat it up.
Lap it up.
He's so good.
Huh?
He's so good.
I agree. He's even when he's not good, as in The Master, he's at least interesting. He's at least compelling. And you're like, I don't really like what I just saw, but I'm at least thinking about it.
So it looks like there's some like actual comedy that he's striving for here. Okay, good, because he didn't do that with his last couple. He didn't
like
do that.
Like I said, it's got a little Lebowski to it when I saw the trailer. Anyway,
like fast paced dialogue or quirky characters.
The quirky characters, the sort of the Joaquin Phoenix character reminded me of Lebowski himself. He's kind of a long haired loser type who finds himself in over his head in a situation. From what I can get from a 2-minute trailer.
Because There Will Be Blood and The Master, neither one of those had, there's absurd moments, and I laughed at many points in both those movies, but nothing where he's actually saying, hey, this is funny.
Right. This could be his most out and out comedy. Well, if you want to call Punch Drunk Love a comedy.
Well, since Punch, in a long time. Since Punch Drunk Love for sure was a comedy, for absolute sure, as well as Boogie Nights had lots of stuff that was played for comedy.
So we'll
strictly
see.
For comedy.
We'll see what this has to offer. You want to do another one?
Sure, sure. Why not? That was my number one, though. So, I mean, it's not going to get any better than
okay.
that. Oh, good. It could. Brian, very little is known about this one. But here we go. Another big one. New Year's Eve. I would probably find myself in the theater, at least that morning, seeing A Most Violent Year by J.C. Chandor.
Yeah, it's on my list, too.
Okay, J.C. Chandor proved to both Brian and I to be somebody that you will see anything that he does.
Yeah, I'm just in on whatever he does.
He made Margin Call, which is one of the more fast-paced, rapid-fire dialogue movies about the crash of the
stock market.
Not just stock market, the economy as a whole.
Sector.
It was almost satire of what actually happened. It was commentary for sure. It wasn't it wasn't based in reality. It was a version of what could have happened.
It was a stylized mirror. Version.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was fantastic. But
the whole thing, it was great. The whole thing was almost a red herring. Like, it almost didn't matter what they were talking about. You're in on the dialogue. You're in the relationships. You're in the interaction. Like, it doesn't matter. They could be talking about soybeans, which in a way they were. But, you know, they could talk about anything.
You felt like there was tenseness to that movie, Margin Call, where you felt like somebody was going to get shot or killed at any minute. But it wasn't that kind of movie. But it had that kind of feel to it, which was really impressive. That was his first movie he ever made. Stanley Tucci.
Nominated for a screenwriting Oscar.
As much as you love Tucci. He does you one better in this movie. He's so good. Then he comes out last year with All Is Lost.
That's right.
Which is almost the polar opposite. The only way it could be more different is if Robert Redford was black.
Oh.
But it's a guy on a boat.
He's pretty tan by the end of the movie.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. It's a guy in a boat. I mean, the man has range like I don't think I've ever seen. J.C. Chandor, I will see anything you do.
And I loved All Is Lost.
He's got one coming out called The Most Violent Year. Very little is known about this movie. It's a crime drama set in New York City in 1981. Yep. Similar to Inherent Vice, which is a crime drama set in L.A. in the 70s.
That's right.
This one's starring Oscar Isaac, who's Llewyn Davis from last year's Inside. Llewyn Davis.
Standard.
Which, you know what? The gay porn that they made of Inside Llewyn Davis, they didn't even change the title.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just called Inside Llewyn Davis. Yeah. So it's economical.
And Jessica Chastain is also in this. David Oyelowo. And Albert Brooks plays a man named Andrew Walsh. So this is a movie. Chastain, one of my favorites. Oscar Isaac. He could be good.
I saw the trailer for Most Violent Year.
Oh, did you? I avoided.
Don't know what to expect from this movie, but like I said, with J.C. Chandor, until he steers me wrong, I'm in.
So that's
he's never let me down.
The last movie of the year, Logan. How you doing over there, buddy? You all right? You good? Should we continue to go here? Because I have I think 26 left.
Might as well, because that was I'll just make that my number three because I have two more to talk about.
Oh, so that was on your list?
Yeah, that's my number two.
Okay,
but I'll just little flip flop. Flip flop.
Go ahead.
I just did. We just talked about Most Violent Year.
All right. Well, should I do one? Can I do another?
I only have two left.
It's like opening presents.
You have a shitload left.
It's like opening gifts. All right. This one, Brian.
What?
Escobar, another biopic. Escobar, Paradise Lost. Okay. First time director. But here's all I need to know. Benicio del Toro playing Pablo Escobar.
It is not on my list.
Benicio del Toro playing Pablo Escobar, Brian.
Yeah, Medellin.
I believe the storyline is a guy is dating a girl. Girl takes guy home to meet her dad. Her dad, Pablo Escobar.
Is it a comedy?
That'd be great if it's not a comedy.
Oh.
And Benicio, he's a method. It's taking chances. Now it could completely flop. No one even talks about it. Hears about it, or it could be welcome back, Mr. Del Toro. You were nominated for an Oscar.
So far, this is the one on your list that I'm the most suspect of.
Why?
I don't know, man.
What about this one, Brian? I don't have dates for either one of these fucks, but White Bird and a Blizzard.
What is that?
Here's all you need to know.
Okay.
Gregor Rocky.
What?
Directing Shailene Woodley. That's all you need to know. Holy fuck.
Who's Gregor Rocky?
Brian.
Wait.
He's a provocateur, Brian. He makes lots of mysterious skin.
Oh.
I didn't make you see that.
No, I've not seen it.
Brian, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Doomsday Generation?
Doom Generation?
Yeah. Doomsday Generation.
We only have so much time left to talk about what's wrong with me.
You ever see The Doom Generation?
I did not.
You did not see The Doom Generation? That was a good one. That was a fan. Vincent D'Onofrio?
Yeah, I understand. I know of it. I have not seen it.
All right. White Bird and a Blizzard. Anything that Woodley's in other than Divergent? Is that what it was called? I will not see that.
Okay.
But Shane Woodley.
Everything else?
Yes.
Okay.
I love her.
How many movies you got?
Shailene Woodley. I love her. Do you love her yet?
She's perfectly fine.
Perfectly fine.
No, she's great. She was in
Spectacular she was Now. In the, she, yeah, she stole my heart.
The Counselor. No, right. No, that's the one where she was dating the guy, the drinking movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Miles Teller.
Sorry, I'm thinking of the other
Spectacular
one.
Spectacular Now.
The Short Term 12. The thing of the other 12. Girl.
She was not in
Brie.
That. Yeah.
Sorry, I got my young starlets confused.
Not Allison Brie. Allison Larson.
She's very good, though. Brie Larson?
Fury on your list, Brian?
No.
What?
No fear. Oh, yeah. I also ran the Brad Pitt movie. Yeah, also ran.
All right. And then we'll go to break after this. All right. Fury, November 14th.
I'm nervous about Fury.
David Ayer directed. He's the director of Harsh Times. Yikers. You seen Harsh Times?
Yikers. I did not see Harsh Times.
Oh, Harsh Times is Harsh Times.
Harsh Times is.
Christian Bale, Harsh Times. You seen it, Logan?
Yeah, it's very awkward.
It's awkwardly horrible. It's just not good. You feel bad for Christian Bale. You can't understand how such a great actor could put in such a poor performance. He plays like a vato. It's so uncomfortable.
Brad Pitt's batting average in movies is high, especially
Brian,
more
we're
recently.
We're talking about
so.
David Ayer at this point. We're going to get to Brad Pitt in a second.
All right. So I'm excited.
David Ayer also directed End of Watch, which people loved last year. I thought it was okay. I had some holes, had some problems.
Good.
I didn't like all the GoPro. This is real life, and this is just two cops, and like it's almost like found footage.
That was a gimmick that needed to go, but other than that, it was a good movie.
David Ayer, the guy who wrote and directed Fury, which is coming out November 14th, is also responsible for writing U-571 as well as Training Day. So I told you, he's got chops. He's got chops. Now, this stars Brad Pitt, Shia LaBeouf, Michael Pena, and Logan Lerman. Perks of Being a Wallflower was where you might know him from. But Fury, Brian, marks the first time a genuine Tiger I tank has ever been used in production of a World War II film, or any film for that matter. Fury features a specific tank, Tiger 131, from the UK's Bovington Tank Museum. It's the only fully functioning Tiger tank in the world, Brian.
Wow.
And what I keep reading about Fury, which kind of was flirting with, you know, not being even mentionable, because I was like, another World War II movie, really?
Yeah.
I've seen this before. Brad Pitt, as badass as he looks, the trailers aren't really doing a whole lot for me.
That's where I was.
Yeah, but reading more and more about this movie and some of the unique techniques that were used on the set, he would have them all like fighting each other every day. I read like he would have them punching each other in the face and using martial arts and whatnot, which usually people shy away from, especially when you got a guy like Brad Pitt. You don't want him with a black eye all of a sudden.
True.
But he really encouraged them all to be very competitive with one another. And I keep hearing that Fury, the actual tank, is as much of a character, as cliche as that sounds, but it's as much of a character as any of the actors in this movie. And I fucking love the idea of that.
Really?
If he pulls that off, and Fury is memorable, much like Medusa was in Bellflower, the car was like actually a character.
Yes.
Like Road Warrior, the car is like a character. If he pulls that off, and Fury is like a memorable tank, and I don't think about tanks the same way after Fury. Yeah, could be really, really good.
Yeah.
So Fury.
I'll give Fury a chance. Like Brad Pitt, like I said, has a high batting average and doesn't make a ton of bad movies. So
he
looks
badass in this movie. I really like his haircut. He looks like he's doing like a, he would fit right into Boardwalk Empire.
Okay.
Wouldn't he? It's just like his style and his, like, he's so badass.
Coming up next.
Apparently he's getting really fat. I read that in
for a role?
It was on the Enquirer when I was in a supermarket line the other day. But apparently for a role, yeah, he's packed on 40 pounds.
It's married life.
Fat Pit.
I think it's Fat Pit.
Coming up next, the conclusion.
Like Fat Pit.
To our most anticipated films. Anderson.
Brad.
I want to tell you what Blue Apron allowed me to do. This is a very nice thing. So Christy's away in New York for a couple of days.
She's always away, having
a stressful trip, and she's come back on a Friday night. Literally, she landed at Friday night, 8 p.m. in LAX, and while she was away on Friday, I was able to make a Blue Apron meal, meatloaf, and roasted potatoes, have it ready, hot and ready for her when she got home. That was a lovely surprise. It was an impromptu date night, and it was all thanks to Blue Apron. They gave me the steps.
Just last week, I made blackened chili dusted chicken. It was very, very good.
Sounds pretty good.
And every time I've made probably half a dozen Blue Apron meals now, they're all fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
Don't tell this to the wife, but I wish I was single.
You guys think
I would be impressing people so much, these girls that I would have over. Like, hey, check out what I cooked. Nothing impresses a woman better more than cooking.
It's true. It is a heartwarming experience to see your husband or your man cooking for you. It is a wonderful thing. And right now, go to blueapron.com/TFV. You get your first two meals free. BlueApron.com/TFV. Two meals free. BlueApron.com/TFV. Anderson.
Yeah.
Went on DraftKings, and I played another one-on-one contest with a listener. Uh-huh. I played against Hoosier Matt, and Hoosier Matt beat my ass 159 to 141. He drafted a hell of a team.
I like 141. I like him.
How dare you? 141, by the way. Good score. His 159 was pretty great.
Quite a bit better.
So good for you, Hoosier Matt. If you'd like to play against me, go to DraftKings.com now. Enter the code TFV to sign up. Become a millionaire, and you can find me. Bob Bryan is my name. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter TFV for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
Hey, this is Greg Fitzsimmons, host of FitzDog Radio, right here on Podcast One. Join me and my guests, people like Zach Galifianakis, John Hamm, Carolla, Hardwick, Rogan, everybody. Track my rage against middle age, FitzDog Radio on Podcast One.
Yeah, welcome back. Thanks again, Union Specific. Union Specific. Please pardon my mouth herpes as I try to pronounce you. Right. I got a bit lip.
Okay, but it's not mouth herpes.
No, it's not. From Austin, Texas.
I'll say that.
Check him out at AndersonandBryan.com. Thanks, dudes.
Thanks, bros. All right, let's do this. Let's round it out. Come home strong.
Let's do it. You have how many movies you have to talk about?
Like four. Oh. Not bad. Maybe five. Okay. Still, I got to do. I still got to flip fast. I still got to talk about a movie, so it's going to take a minute or two. So, but let's get to this. I will start off with something a little weaker, okay. Brian. A little weaker.
Okay.
The one that I'm not holding my breath for. The only documentary I have on my list. This is called The Overnighters. Okay. Don't ask me when it's coming out because I didn't write it. God damn, Dan. Why did I not write it down? I thought I wrote them all down. The Overnighters. The only doc I have on here. Sounds very compelling. Here's what it sounds like. It's about migrant workers.
Oh yeah, I know this one.
And a church in North Dakota.
Yeah, they couldn't find a place to live.
Apparently, they came in droves. These migrant workers. And they couldn't find any place to settle down.
Mm-hmm.
And a priest opens his doors. He says, hey, you can. This is a documentary, real life.
Yep.
You can stay in my church. To the outrage of the
controversy,
community.
Controversy.
They were very angry.
Local controversy.
And I like anything that is about uncomfortable racism and or controversy. And
I do love uncomfortable racism.
I could see this movie really being one that's gripping.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for The Overnighters. It's a documentary that will probably be, as most documentaries are, in limited release at some point. But I hope for big things with The Overnighters.
Really?
Overnighters!
Yeah, I'll see this.
Also, Brian, on the list, this one's not getting a whole lot of talk, which makes me a little bit concerned. It's coming out in like a week and a half, October 10th. It's called Kill the Messenger.
Yes, Kill the Messenger.
It's on your also ran the list
it
here.
Is.
Now, this is a movie that should
this
be...
This is a Jeremy Renner film.
Yeah, this is a movie that should be... interesting, and you should be aware of because, first of all, Michael Cuesta directed it. He's the director of LIE, Long Island Expressway. Paul Dano's one of his very first movies. I really like that LIE. One of the best trailers I've ever seen.
Really?
It's been streaming forever, as far as I know. LIE, check that out. Paul, very young Paul Dano in some compromised positions with an older boy. Yeah, uncomfortable. But Michael Cuesta directed this one. He's also the producer of 12 and Holding, one of my favorite movies. But based on a true story of journalist Gary Webb, starring Jeremy Renner, Ray Liotta, Robert Patrick, and Michael K. Williams, once again, better known as Omar. Better known as Omar. Michael K. Williams. But this one looks like, I think DeLorean might even be involved in this. The actual,
really?
We're like, it looks like it from the trailer, from the look of the trailer.
Yeah, this is about the influx of crack, the crack epidemic in the 80s, right?
Yeah, it's cocaine, crack. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't be DeLorean then because he was a 70s guy. But and about the government's involvement in it and knowing about it coming in and out. It looks Scorsese-esque.
I feel like DeLorean happened in the 80s.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think DeLorean. I looked through the credits and I couldn't find anyone named DeLorean.
Either way.
Yeah, either way. This one looks interesting. Jeremy Renner looks like he's doing his best Jeremy Renner thing, which is when he's on his game, it's great.
It's true.
So, Kill the Messenger. This is a movie that, considering it's coming out next week, I don't see any billboards.
Very under the
radar.
No
one's talking about it.
I was shocked when I watched the trailer to find out that it's coming out so soon.
So, Kill the Messenger. There we go. I can tell you, everything that I have left is, here we go.
My next movie, which was my number three, but I'll flip-flop with number two for now because talked about a most violent year already, Anderson.
Yeah.
I've seen there's a new trailer today, came out for Interstellar. Mm-hmm. I saw it. I still don't know exactly what to think, exactly what to expect. However, Christopher Nolan has never let me down. Aside from Insomnia, I'm a we'll let that go.
And you haven't seen his first one, The Follow.
I did not see that.
Was that The Following?
Following? Christopher Nolan's never let me down.
You should see The Following. I bet you would think it would let you down.
A confounding trailer. But I put my faith in him. I put faith in Christopher Nolan to deliver the goods. Especially on a grand scale. On the big scale, he is. There's not many people who are better.
Now, admittedly, I've not seen a trailer on Interstellar. I have
read
a lot about this movie. I know that, you know, it's shrouded in secrecy, as all Christopher Nolan movies are. Shrouded in secrecy, Interstellar.
I remember when the Inception trailer came out, I thought, this doesn't look very good.
He let me down with Inception. I can tell you that much. Yeah.
You didn't like Inception?
I did not like
Inception. We talked about this.
We talked about this at length. Fucking
you're suspect. You're suspect. Everything you say is suspect.
Interstellar. This is going to be his 2001 / Star Wars. Probably going to fall somewhere in between. I would think leaning more on 2001. Speaking of leaning, Brian, reportedly...
It does have some 2001 to it.
Early reports are that he's not relying or leaning much on CGI.
Okay.
If he can build it, if he can make it, he has been.
Okay.
Which I absolutely applaud. I love that.
I agree.
Actors are reporting that they don't have to fake looking at things like they do
so often. There's something in the scene with them.
He's actually projecting like black holes and wormholes like outside of their spacecraft that they're actually sitting in. So all they have to do is look out the window. There it is on these giant sound stages.
How do they get the cameras into space? That's my question.
Brian,
sorry,
it's not the deal. Apparently, he really took poor Anne Hathaway through the ringer, and she almost vomited numerous times while doing zero gravity stuff. So, you know, he was blowing on her neck at one point, I read, I think in E-Dub. He's pushing
up
to the
limits.
Why is
blowing on the neck do anything?
Making her feel better, because he felt
bad.
Does
it help?
Yeah, I don't know.
I've never heard that.
But this is coming in 169 minutes.
Whoa!
Which is a little bit concerning. I think there's going to be a lot of meandering. I don't know if he can keep up the pace.
It's 11 minutes short of 3 hours.
That he did with maybe the greatest action movie ever made, which was The Dark Knight.
True.
God, if he could keep up a similar pace with that. But it's not, I think it's going to be lingering, like insomnia. I'm afraid, you know, space movies are so... Gravity, so much lingering, and you know, look at how beautiful it is. You get kind of lost. 2001, one of the most lingering movies you'll ever see,
true,
as great as it is. But as much as I have a problem with Christopher Nolan sometimes and his pretentiousness, he is a fucking genius. He takes pictures of himself, Brian, self-portraits, and sends them into magazines. Use this one.
He's a good guy.
He's a perfectionist like there are no others. He might be the modern-day Kubrick.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think the greatest thing about Christopher Nolan is his hatred for 3D, which I absolutely applaud. He loves IMAX. And he's constantly trying to get directors to shift from 3D to IMAX, which if there was more IMAX out there and less 3D, what a beautiful world that would be.
True.
What a fan. The world I like to wake up in every morning.
This would be a glorious IMAX movie.
So this is starring Matthew McConaughey as Cooper, Jessica Chastain, Anne Hathaway, and who else? Michael Caine is in this. Topher Grace, Casey Affleck.
I could use a little Topher Grace in my life.
Ellen Burstyn and John Lithgow. The storyline... as loose as it is, it's in the not too distant future where we've run out of food here on this planet, and they're using wormholes to get beyond our galaxy to look for. Essentially, they're like they're scouts out looking for new
habitable planets.
Yes,
worlds.
That's all we know, which is very basic.
I'm in. Like I said, put my faith into him.
What do you got left, Brian?
I have one movie left.
Right.
And by the way, many also-rans that have not been mentioned. I'll see if they make the listener list. But like I said, a deep year for movies I'm looking forward
to. It's very deep. I'm telling me.
How many have left? Two?
I got 1, 2, 3. Here we go. I'm just going to start reading off.
Okay.
Is Foxcatcher not on your list?
Foxcatcher's not on the list.
What the fuck?
Good call, though. It looks really good. It's right here. The ones I was even considering put on the list, I wrote the date next to, 11/14.
November 14th, as Brian just said, this is another biopic. I think a lot of you have probably heard of Foxcatcher by now. Bennett Miller directs. He's the director of Moneyball, Capote, as well as The Cruise.
Capote.
Foxcatcher comes in at 130 minutes, which is... digestible. You can do that. No, 130 is all right. Based on a true story of Mark Schultz, an Olympic wrestler whose relationship with sponsor John DuPont, and brother Dave Schultz would lead to unlikely circumstances. If you have not seen the trailer for this or a poster for this, wait until you see Steve Carell.
Unrecognizable.
Now, if Steve Carell pulls this off...
Not unrecognizable, but it looks altered.
He should be cleaning his mantle right now for his Oscar.
Mm.
And they love comedians turned... dramatic actors, and he looks unrecognizable. His voice sounds unrecognizable. He's playing this true life creepy fucking character, wrestling coach. And the trailer is spooky.
I wanted to look away
from this trailer, and I couldn't.
Genuinely creepy.
I try and look away from trailers. I could not look away. And unfortunately, and show you way too much.
And genuinely creepy, but nothing creepy goes on other than he's just a weirdo.
Also starring Channing Tatum, as well as Mark Ruffalo, who play the Schultz brothers. This has been a project that has been thrown around Hollywood for some time now. In fact, Gary Oldman was the first choice to play the DuPont role. Heath Ledger and Ryan Gosling, as well as Bill Nighy, were also all considered for various leads in this movie over the years. So Foxcatcher, it's like obviously an Oscar style movie, but just the fact that Bennett Miller is going to be crafting this one, okay, and has crafted this one, Moneyball was just near perfection.
Yeah,
so good. He's such a good storyteller.
I didn't like Moneyball, we talked about in the last episode. I didn't like it as much as everyone else, but obviously a good movie.
It's just, I mean, you watch that thing, it's just, next time Moneyball comes on TV, just watch it. It's just, it doesn't even belong on your little TV.
Yeah.
It's just pure cinema. I can't believe I said that, but
do one more,
then
I'll do my number one.
Pure cinema.
Do one more.
All right, Whiplash isn't on your list?
Whiplash.
Whiplash is not on your list?
It's right there, the piano, or the drum movie.
The drum movie.
It's the drum movie. I watched the trailer.
It is a drum movie. This is Miles Teller of Spectacular Now. J.K. Simmons from Everything. True Grit, as well as...
you recognize Jack.
Oz. Yeah, you've seen him. He's got...
He's a farmer's insurance guy.
Fuck. I had it written down, Brian. He's got like 141 credits, I think.
Really? I can see that.
J.K. Simmons. But if this is a J.K. Simmons you have never seen...
J. Jonah Jameson.
I've seen plenty of trailers. I've seen this trailer probably 4 or 5 times just in the last week or so. So it's really getting out there quite a bit. I bet a lot of people, I bet a lot of our listeners have seen it. But it's J.K. Simmons playing the coach,
Maestro.
Maestro for a competitive jazz band, like in the leading... school
like
for
a conservatory.
Music, yeah. And Miles Teller is his new drummer, and it gets physical and terrifying.
Yes.
Fast.
He's abusive.
Very abusive. And the trailer sold me. I've been reading about this movie for over a year now, probably, because the director actually made a short with the same cast a while ago, which did huge things at Sundance, I guess. And then they got the funding. They did the old school. It was a new school route where you make a short of the feature you want. You shop it around with the actual characters. It's the way that Sling Blade got funded back in the day.
Right, now it's very common.
But Whiplash, a lot of buzz. And the trailer absolutely sold me on this movie.
It's a good trailer.
Can't wait for Whiplash. Comes out October 10th, so we'll be talking about that one sooner than later.
True. My number one, and I would be surprised if it was your last one, although then again, maybe not. I don't know where you stand on Gone Girl. Gone Girl is my number one most anticipated movie. I know, I'm disappointing, but David Fincher.
I'm so disappointed.
It's a David Fincher film.
It comes out like next week. We'll talk about it. It comes out this week. It comes out today.
Comes out today. This podcast.
So I'll be flick fest.
Coincidence?
I'll be talking about this next week, as will you, I bet.
Probably.
Casey Affleck, his brother, is in this.
That's right. Casey Affleck's older brother.
Yes.
Yep. Benjamin.
And I can't make anything with Benjamin on a list of mine. Because he's still fucking milquetoast to me, Brian.
Outside of Zodiac, and even including Zodiac, I guess, Fincher's never let us down. He's never steered us wrong.
Oh, you're forgetting Alien 3. Alien 4? Alien 3.
Alien 3.
I liked Alien 3. I didn't think it was bad. It was very depressing, but I didn't think it was bad. And I didn't dislike Zodiac. I liked Zodiac. It just didn't
have
an end.
I'm saying. Zodiac, for all its flaws, was still an interesting and memorable movie, if not a good movie.
I wasn't a fan of Benjamin Button.
I loved Benjamin Button.
Yeah, I know you did.
Loved it. Even Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which maybe is my least favorite movie.
I didn't like the game that
movies.
Much. I love his
You
tone.
Didn't like the game?
I thought the game was absurd.
You're dumb.
I thought it was ridiculous.
You're dumb.
The end completely lost
You're a dumb person.
That's nice. Yeah. You're a dumb person for not having a certain movie on your list.
Which is what?
I'll get to it.
Okay.
Dumb fuck.
Gone Girl comes out this week.
Isn't it just the Peterson story, right?
It was a novel.
It was a novel, but which was obviously, as far as I can tell, inspired by the actual true life events of the guy that killed his wife up in Daly City.
Or did he?
And the baby.
Mm.
Yeah. And apparently he changed the book all around. And I will see anything Fincher does, obviously.
Yeah, I don't have much interest in the book, but if
I didn't even put
Fincher's
this on the list
because
it comes out next week. It comes out today.
The movie that pushed me over the edge for David Fincher, by the way, we should have a conversation about, hey, let's have a quick conversation. What is David Fincher's best movie?
7.
Is it better than Fight Club?
I like it more, yeah.
Is it better than The Social Network?
Oh, it's a good one.
Because Social Network, they're apples and oranges, but when someone told me, oh, there's a Facebook movie coming out, I'm like, it's a fucking Facebook movie? Just, Are you shitting me? Great movie.
It's very, very, very good movie.
So it'll take a subject that I have no interest in and make it a fantastic film.
Listen, Seven is still, I mean, it could be to do with the time in my life when it came out, where I was at, what I was responding to. I saw the movie in theater 7 times as an homage to Seven. That's how nerdy I am. I did. I saw it 7 times in the theaters. Loved it every time. First time I ever saw Seven, like, it was one of those rare instances where I couldn't get up. Like, when the movie was over, I was just like drained. Like, hold, did I just... It was the first time I really experienced Fincher, because I don't think I did with Alien 3.
No.
I saw it in the theater. I remember going to see it with my dad, but I didn't really know what Fincher was until I saw Seven.
Sure.
I think that's where most people kind of understood there's a new guy who's making new kinds of movies, and it's Seven.
I agree with that. However, the conversation can be had between those three movies, I think, which is best. And the fact that it can be even had with those three movies is remarkable. So
I have one left.
What's your number one? What's your number one film?
Brian. Speaking of a new guy in town, this guy's not new, but he's showing us something there.
Speaking of a new guy in town, that has nothing to do with that.
How do you not have Birdman on your
list?
How do you not have Birdman?
Michael Keaton.
How do you not have it on your list?
I think it'll be a really interesting performance. I'm not sure about the movie.
Let me tell you about the movie.
Tell me, please.
Flick Fashion.
No!
Saw Birdman today. Very, very excited to see Birdman today.
Birdman.
Brian, I don't need the song.
Sorry.
I don't need to sing Birdman and bastardize what is the best movie I've seen all year.
Wow.
Birdman is Michael Keaton and Ed Norton, as well as Emma Stone and Naomi Watts.
Okay.
All right. It's the illusion of one long take that lasts the entire film. That's what he creates here, Brian.
Okay.
This is the director, Alejandro González Iñárritu, who did Amores Perros.
Okay.
Which I... just caught up with, like, a couple years ago.
Loved it.
A year and a half. Loved it. Have you seen this?
No, I've not.
Mexican Pulp Fiction.
No, I've
Mexican
not.
Pulp Fiction. Really good movie. You seen Amores Perros? No?
No, I haven't.
Really good movie. I highly recommend that movie.
Okay.
Fantastic movie. He also did Babel. Take it or leave it.
I couldn't get up the nerve to see it.
He also did 21 Grams, which I could definitely leave. Never, you know, heavy.
Heavy, unnecessarily.
Unnecessarily heavy. And he did Beautiful, which I didn't even see. It's 2.5 hours.
Didn't I see?
And I did. I missed that one because I'm like, I'm done watching your take on life, which is very difficult to take.
Mm.
He does a comedy, Brian. A dark comedy, yes, but a comedy. And he does it such justice. I'm going to write about this on AndersonCavin.com. I haven't time to write about it for a while, but it'll be different than this review because I'll have more time to think about it. And I don't appreciate your own, thank God, especially when I read your fucking very mediocre book.
Wow, very mediocre.
Yeah.
Not just mediocre.
Very mediocre.
When mediocre indicates the middle. This was very the middle.
It's very middle. Yes, very middle book. So I will be writing about this one.
I'll sign you a copy.
I think you tried to sign me a copy.
Oh, yeah.
Sign it, and I just left it in there. What he much like Rope, I was just kidding, buddy. I liked your book.
It was more, it was upper mediocre.
I liked the part about me.
There were parts about you.
I like those parts a lot. Best parts of the book. Like Rope, like Alfred Hitchcock's Rope. This is the illusion of all one take. Now, there are many long, long takes. He does, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say there's probably 9, maybe 10.
Okay.
All take, like as breaks. The score was almost completely made up of drum solos.
Interesting.
This whole movie is a meta character study and an indictment on the state of Hollywood.
Right.
And the comic book tentpole franchises that are taking up all the screens in town, as well as all the good actors. That's completely and totally touched them on and talked about. The state of live theater as well and its participants. It's an indictment of the powers of critics. And it's a study of one man's massive ego. And Brian, his delusions of grandeur that come and go whenever he's feeling insecure.
Mm.
Which is a common and real life thing. And you see it all the time, especially with people with drinking problems. I mean, they actually feel like they allow themselves to have these delusions of grandeur. That this is... depicted in a way that I've never seen before in a movie, and it's so well done.
When did you see it?
I saw it today.
Oh wow!
Just today, actually. Watch the Pirate game.
Thoughts are swimming.
I did not watch the Wild Card game because this was more important. Because I was very,
it was a great game.
Very excited.
It was a really good game.
It was not a good game. Very excited about Birdman, and was a little bit worried going in from some of the things that I read on the internet. Try not to read too much, but right now it's got a 9.1 on IMDb,
wow.
Which I was concerned about because. Usually it's like that makes me think, really? I'm going to see a 9.1 movie? It was only played at Telluride and I think Venice. Huh. I think those are the only two film festivals that's shown it. Very few people have gotten a chance to score this one yet, but very Charlie Kaufman-esque from beginning to end. It just feels like Charlie Kaufman wrote this one. He didn't. He had nothing to do with it, but it feels very, very Charlie Kaufman-esque. Oscar nomination predictions here. Now, this is the first big fall movie that I've seen. Hmm.
So there's many to come.
I just don't see a whole lot being... You've never seen a movie like this. No one really has. It's going to be up for best film.
Okay.
I can guarantee you that. I'm not saying it's going to win. It's going to be up. There's no way it can't be. Best director. Has to be. Best cinematographer. They got the same guy that did Gravity. I have a lot of negative things to say about Gravity, but the way that the guy moved the camera around is, despite the fact he's using lots of CGI to help him out, great cinematographer. Okay. And they needed him here because the camera's constantly moving in and out, down halls. It's all shot on Broadway in New York at one of the stages where he's putting on this play. The storyline... I didn't even talk about the storyline. It's a washed-up has-been actor who's late in his career.
Played by Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, who used to be a big star. He was in three tentpole movies called Birdman. He's played a superhero, comic book hero, action figure, movie star. And he knows that he's kind of a one-trick pony. Brian likes to say that a lot. And he's in the twilight of his career.
Kind of a one-trick pony that way.
And instead of doing Birdman 4, he wants to do... take a risk, spend all his own money on a Broadway play about Carver. What's his name?
George Washington Carver?
Anyways, he adapts a story and stars in it himself.
Custer?
And directs it himself. And he's put, because he wants to be relevant and he wants to be important. Zach Galifianakis is his right-hand man, producer, and and attorney. He's great. Zach Galifianakis is strong in this movie. It's going to be up for Best Cinematographer. Best Actor, for sure Keaton's going to be up for Best Actor for this. Hmm. Blows you away. And
good, because he's an underrated actor for his whole career, and it'd be nice to see him get a little recognition.
I can't see a world where he's not up for Best Actor in this role. Even though there are only five, get it. I haven't seen a lot of them. I can't see it. Ed Norton has to be up for Best Supporting. Ed Norton, as good as everyone is in this movie, anytime Ed Norton's on he just steals every scene. Every time he's on the screen. Holy shit. And
saw a preview of this, right? Because this is not in theaters yet.
Comes out like in 2 weeks, I think.
Okay.
Comes out very soon. Comes out in October.
Look at you with the sneak peeks.
And Emma Stone is fucking awesome. I would be surprised if she doesn't get Best Supporting nomination. For those of you who don't care about Oscars, I apologize. But
get the
this
fuck
is
out.
One of those movies. Now, people that aren't going to like this movie, there is a lot of inside like actor speak and actor talk and like Broadway talk. Some of it probably even went over my head. And it's very snarky and it's fairly cynical. And the movie, honestly, Brian... almost lost me the last 15 minutes. In fact, I would like it even more than I did if it wasn't for the last 15 minutes. It gets a little bit carried away with itself. A little too whimsical, but Birdman, the best movie I've seen all year.
Huh.
I can't wait till it actually gets released and more people can talk about it and see it. And I hope everyone has the same reaction as I did. The illusion of it just... You're always a part... You're right there. And he was so smart because it could have easily been one of these restricted narratives, whereas with Keaton all the time.
Right.
Or it could have, even though it's all one take or the illusion of, they still full time in space. It takes place over about three or four days. It's leading up to the open of this play that he's putting on. So you're always in the bowels of the theater and... you just see so much, and it was just so goddamn good.
You realize the error of your ways is that you've chosen a movie for your number one most anticipated that you've already seen.
No, that's why it was a bonus flick fashion, because I didn't want to do it at the top, because it was on my list. This would have been on my top five if I did a traditional top five. No, Brian, my number one is Inherent Vice.
Okay.
That was my clear-cut number one, Inherent Vice.
Gotcha.
But Birdman is definitely worthy.
Okay.
I hope it's on the listeners' top five. I hope it's on the radar enough that.
Apropos, number five is Birdman. Sweet. Number four, Foxcatcher.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, the upcoming Gone Girl. Number two, Inherent Vice, which means the number one, as voted on by our listeners, is Interstellar.
There you go.
I have a feeling I'm going to hate Interstellar.
Anything you didn't mention, Anderson? You mentioned a lot of movies.
Yeah, Tim Burton's got a new one coming out called Big Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Another biopic. Mm-hmm. Exodus, Gods and Kings by Ridley Scott.
I should be excited
for
Exodus. Christian
Bale. It looks too religious for me.
I feel like Ridley Scott may have lost his fastball.
Mm-hmm. it's just, I don't, I'm tired of that period a little bit. A little bit tired of that period.
Yeah, I agree. There's a little fatigue. There's a little Bible fatigue.
The theory of everything, the story of about Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, I'm in for that one.
But James Marsh is the guy that directed it. He's the guy that is responsible for Man on Wire as well as Project Nim, both docs. Mm. So I'm Big Hero 6. That's the Disney CGI film, which could be cute, could be sweet, could be one of the classics. Who knows?
We'll see.
Mr. Turner, which is a Mike Lee vehicle. Unbroken, Angelina Jolie taking on the military, and
I'm not sold on her as a director, but the movie looks interesting.
And
watch the trailer. I know you're not excited for it, probably like I am, but Jason Reitman's new movie, Men, Women, and Children.
Oh no, that's banned.
No,
I banned that. Okay. Not, and you know what? I was delighted, and I not to be a prick, but the trailer makes it look pretty provocative, right? It's out in theaters. It's already got limited release.
Oh, is it?
The score is in.
Oh, no.
I hope that's not what we're gambling on today.
No, but it's not good.
43, yeah.
Wasn't his last movie terrible, too? Was the Labor Day or something? Or?
Wasn't it Young Adult? His last one?
It wasn't a Young Adult.
No, he did the one with Brolin. Josh Brolin, he hides out in What's-Her-Fuck's house. Isn't that him?
No.
Oh. I thought he did.
No. You're right, Labor Day. You're right.
There you go. Thank you.
And then Young Adult before that.
Make a drop of that.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But this looks like a ripoff of Disconnect.
Yeah, it definitely does.
It does look like Disconnect.
Very Disconnect.
All right. Let's gamble and wrap this bitch up.
It's a 3-hour episode.
All right. Last week you gambled on The Equalizer.
Yeah, we did.
At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 65%. Anderson bid 47 and Brian 70. Currently, the Wednesday after release, the Rotten Tomatoes score for The Equalizer has dropped.
No!
To 60%, making Brian the winner.
I'm on a streak.
Winner loses. The listener loses when Brian wins. Hey, Listen Up, Philip is a Jason Schwartzman movie that's also on my also-ran, and I will be talking about this one next week. I'm going to be watching this soon, and I hope for big things. He plays a narcissistic writer.
Okay.
Total prick, Jason Schwartzman. Should be fun.
I can identify with that.
Yes, you can.
What, so you never seen Real Steel?
Brian, come on. There's so many good movies, and they're coming out in theaters. Just assign me Gone Baby. Whatever it's called. Gone Girl.
We can't do that. Yeah, I can't do that. You know what, though? You know what? I'm going to have mercy on you. There's a, wait a minute.
Fucking Real Steel? You don't want to open those floodgates.
Brian. No, I'm not going to make watch Real Steel. Not yet. See Revenge of the Electric Car. It's good. You'll like it. I saw it.
No, I saw that.
Kind of outdated.
Logan.
The electric car is around.
Yeah.
It's the Revenge of the Electric Car. The car comes back.
Oh, I'm thinking the first one.
No, this is the second one.
What was the first one?
Who killed the electric car?
You said it was on your list. You never saw it.
I think I might have seen that.
Really?
Yeah. Is Mel Gibson in it?
I don't believe he is.
All right, I'll see it. Where do I see this fucker?
I think I streamed it way back.
Why do you have to see something more relevant? Oh, hey, so back to Birdman real quick, all right? It's super, plugged into the pop culture and what's going on today, right? Emma Stone, her character had some mix-ups. She's talking about, what she's, and dealing with and this and that. Pops out Dr. Drew's name. I was delighted to hear Drew's name, my buddy Drew. Yeah, she's like, it wasn't like Dr. Drew or anything. But and then Bumblebee even makes an appearance at one point. This movie's all up in
this
your grill.
This is glorious.
Brian. If you look closely, you can even see a giant projected Chef Gordon Ramsay in the background.
Okay, I like this.
Fuck, this movie is... It's just incredible that he pulled it off. Huh. Just walking cameras following him through Times Square, Brian. You see that in the trailer? How did he pull it off? I don't
care. No, I think I did. All right. Hey, Revenge of the Electric Car is good because it's actually less about the electric car thing, and it's a lot about Elon Musk and Tesla, and it's kind of an interesting... half the movie is almost like a little bio documentary on him. It's really interesting. I still think about some of the things I saw in that movie.
Fairly certain I saw this, but I'll watch it again.
Well, if you've seen it, tell me, and I'll sign you something else.
I'm fairly certain I saw it.
You said earlier you did not see it.
Well, I saw the first one for sure, and then it was on my most anticipated, and I usually say, whatever, this is boring for everyone. I'll see it if it's streaming. If not, assign me something else.
Okay.
All right, well, this week you're going to be gambling on Gone Girl.
Gone Girl.
Uninspired. How long is Gone Girl?
It's long, right?
It's Gone Girl.
It's like over 2 hours.
I'm sick of losing. I'm sick of having to waste picks. Flick Fashions.
Who are you wasting picks on?
I don't want to talk about it. It's the opening of the fall season, and next week I'm going to be in here going, 2011's Revenge of the Electric Car was quite a feat in the documentary world.
Okay, I have a number.
Really told me about. So do I, 81.
85.
Ooh. Hit us, Logan. Hit us.
All right. Well, currently, the Wednesday before release, with 81 reviews, Gone Girl has a Rotten Tomato score of 86%.
Oh, fuck me.
How many reviews?
So it will be close. 81 reviews.
That's
about half as what will come in by next week.
That's a lot of reviews.
All right, Brian. All right. So let's put this bitch to bed.
Go to bed, bitch.
Wow.
Sorry.
Not what I was suggesting you say.
Thank you, Union Specific, for being our featured artist of the week. We appreciate it. Check them out at AndersonandBrian.com, and that's where you go, AndersonandBrian.com, to check out the fan art this week from Patrick D. Thanks, Patrick D. We appreciate you sending that in. Send in your fan art, please. We like it. We use it. We appreciate it. All the films we talked about. We talked about a lot of films this episode, and you're going to want to write those down for the future, so this is actually a handy place to have all those. There's a little tab up there at the top says Honorable Mentions, and that's all the films we talked about in every episode. We got to rename
it. It is.
Yeah, we got to rename that.
You can go to our site and find honorable mentions. And like
it's called lists. Honorable Mentions, but it's a list of all the films we talked about in the episode.
Ah, okay.
We should rename that.
Yeah, I feel like we should.
Leave a comment. We like to
it should be called the films, maybe. No?
That sucks.
Honorable Mentions makes it sound like it's also Rand's.
I think you're both right.
I'm just playing on the theme of the show. It's a recurring word that gets used a lot. Why are we critiquing my web design skills right now?
We're not. We're critiquing the title of a button.
It's actually your copywriting skills. check us out, like Logan said earlier, on Facebook and Twitter, The Film Vault on both. If you want to play the new parent guide game.
That could be fun. That could be fun.
I'm in for that.
Ryan, so far, he proved that it's doable.
Yeah, for sure.
Even though it's kind of an easy one.
if I'm choosing
between. Oh, you know what? Some people, if you didn't listen to the Amazon read, that's we played it for the first time in the middle of that little read there.
Yeah, go back and listen to that. And if you want to listen or read Anderson's longer review of Birdman, AndersonCowan.com. Check out Save It For Air, new episode, Logan? Yeah.
Yep, new episode today. 2 days ago.
Boo. SIFAPodcast.com. After Disaster, TheAfterDisaster.com. Pardon me. And is that it, Anderson?
New After Disaster. We're actually doing the Blacker Disaster tomorrow night, which should be a lot of fun.
Oh, no.
It'll be posted probably Friday. It's where we're having 3 to 3.5 black listeners call in or come in to the studio. And we're going to have some discussions about things that have been mentioned or talked about that are questionably racist or not. We're going to have a good discussion. You are the whitest fuck I know, so no, the answer is no.
Is the 3.5 a reference to someone who is of mixed ethnicity?
Yes, okay. He's Affleck. So,
mulatto.
Next week's going to be a good one because we're finally going to get into some of the fall movies, some of the good movies. We're going to have some good flick fashions next week. And like every week, we do it for Van Gogh.
Did you know, Anderson?
Mm-hmm.
TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. In the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. Now, when you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com. You'll find out what people paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com. See upfront pricing information. Lock in your savings. Third step, simple. Print out your TrueCar savings certificate. Take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money. Never overpay.
Honestly, Brian, when I'm ready to buy a new car, there's no way I'm going anywhere other than TrueCar.
Because that's the trusted source for your best.
Well, we
price.
Do these reads, and I actually hear from people who come back with very positive reviews.
Nice. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com. Thanks for the help, buddy.